Hey there, guys, and welcome to Comaticast, your weekly source for community strategy and... wait, no. That's the wrong intro. That's the wrong show. This is Squirecast, dammit. Enjoy the episode. Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Squirecast. What's up? It's me. I'm finally back after, hell of a hiatus.
Six long months.
It has not been 6 months, but it's been a long time. So, joining me this week on, I honestly cannot remember what episode number this is, and I'm not going to say, because I have plans to possibly cut out the one just before this, so it's going to complicate things.
Whoa. Forgetting the show numbers, Chewie's thing.
Whoa. Who was that voice? Okay. Alright, hang on, we'll get to that in a second. But first of all, joining us this week are my two regular co-hosts, Callum, Stephen. Callum, what's up, man?
In the hiatus, I've since had a son. His name is Andrew. we'll be celebrating his first birthday in a couple of months, so yeah, pretty excited about that.
Why didn't you tell me about this?
Basically been playing magic, doing, the regular stuff, making people cry, playing Turbo Fog.
Yeah, you got a new Got a new build for Standard, got a new build for Modern, and just, we've been generally having a lot of fun with Magic. It's good. Alright. Stephen, how you doing, man?
I don't know who any of you people are.
It should be noted that Stephen's not normally up this early, because for his job, he normally works.
I'm not normally up this early.
Look. It's been alright. I just had 5 straight weeks of, full-time work for no pay, because that's how my degree works, unfortunately.
Yeah. Nursing prac.
Yeah, fucking nurse. Yeah, but no. So anyway, I finally had a week off, and I actually got to build decks and play Magic again, so getting back in there.
Yeah.
It's an amazing feeling, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
And speaking of amazing feelings, it's great to have our second guest host on the show, No Callum. That's not what we're doing. Alright, this, ladies and gentlemen, drum roll please, is William from CommanderCast. What's up, man?
Hey, I'll be your goblin tactician today. How are you guys doing?
Very, very good, but a little bit tired because it is 8:30 a.m. and I know a lot of listeners are out there like, what the fuck, it's 8:30 a.m., what the fuck are you talking about? No, this is way too early for me, okay? It's before 10. There are no times that exist before 10. second guest host, right? This is crazy. William.
Yeah. I was actually really surprised to hear Squeon just, many months ago.
Yeah. It was fantastic having Squeon, and, he was a really good guy to have on the show. Very happy to, slum it, essentially, with us. You know, come down for it's like Monday Night Magic, and then, there's us,
Squee likes to come down for a turn, and then you just sack him, and then he comes back the next turn.
It's fine, he can just, do whatever he wants, he's just back in the next upkeep. Alright, so for listeners who might not be aware of, your wonderful tones, William, where might people know you from? CommanderCast, obviously, but, explain that to listeners who are not familiar with the other podcast.
Well, you might know me from such podcasts as CommanderCast. You also might know me from a little thing that I started recently called Journey to Somewhere, which is a Mark Rosewater-esque type podcast where if I have 20-ish minutes on a drive, I'll just go ahead and record an audio editorial for me to post on the site. CommanderCast is basically my only claim to fame right now. I'm a level one judge locally in my area. I help at the store. I'm basically the store's magic guy at Card Academy in Roundsburg, Ohio, which is a fantastic shop. And I urge everyone who swings by to check it out. Yeah, and my whole gig is just ripping off of everyone else's podcast. That's essentially all I do. I find things I like about other people's podcasts, and then I call it an homage. Yes. And use it in my own show.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to make that same reference. It's a reference or a homage, right? You're not ripping them off.
Oh, absolutely. It's not stealing if it's an homage.
Absolutely.
Nothing but the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah. So it's good. Having you on the show, I'm guessing probably inject a lot of energy to the show. You're always really I always love listening to any episode of CommanderCast that just has, like a big boisterous intro from William. And when I was on the show, you were so much louder in person than I expected. And, it's good.
I've been told I'm a very incidentally loud person.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. It's fantastic. It's there's a lot of enthusiasm to your voice. It's great.
Also, it's nice having someone who actually knows what they're talking about with Magic the Gathering. Because we have Matt and Callum and me, and we're just, between the three of us, we're one competent player, I think.
Yeah. But see, it's also a problem, because when you think you know what you're talking about, you get, like, jived isn't the right word. You get rustled every time someone said, you hear someone talk about something and you just know for a fact that's inherently wrong. It's yeah. like, I want to interject myself into every podcast I hear where they're speculating or they're talking about something. Oh. I go, wait, no, that's not right. Yeah, no, this thing clearly says no.
Like anyone other than Card Advantage that's talking about flavor, I cringe sometimes listening to it where they're just like, oh man, what is the interaction between like Jace and Liliana? I don't get it. They've never met before. And I'm like, there's a story there. Guys, please let me tell you about it. It's good.
So now you get to correct us in real time.
Yeah. No, I mean, we were shot down nice and quickly, off any pedestal that we ever thought we might have about knowing magic when, Jason emailed us. So it's always good. No, it's good. It's good. We have our sort of, fairy god judge that sits on our shoulder and goes, yeah, no, you're wrong.
Oh, that's what we're there for.
I really like that guy. I don't know what it is. Just, you know, sitting in his house, drinking a six pack of VB and going, you know what I might do today? I might email Squirecast and tell them that they got a lot of stuff wrong. And that's nice. You know, he actually took time out of his day to email us.
That's yes, good.
It's lonely at the top.
Judging is one of the few gigs where you are actually encouraged to tell people they're wrong. Especially when they try and go, well, on Modo, he goes, no. Yeah. If you're quoting Modo, you're already wrong.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, because Warpworld just breaks the game. That doesn't happen in paper.
You're like, well, you know, when I shuffle off, was it Preordain? Ponder? When I choose to shuffle off Ponder, it doesn't actually shuffle my library. That's how that works, right?
Yeah, and Brain Maggot, it actually just lets you keep looking at their hand, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's suddenly become telepathy.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, of course, as I'm sure you're aware, William, because you are a listener to the show, I think it's time to kick off into our Weird Card of the Week segment. And as the guest host, would you like to start us off?
I would. Now, the card I have is from when I got into Magic, I had this kind of weird thing where, like, I found a couple of 8th edition decks in middle school, which is like 6th-ish grade, found us a couple of starter decks, thought it was like cool, like, at that point I had already gotten into Yu-Gi-Oh! Mm-hmm. So card games were already a thing that I love. But here's one where it's like angels and soldiers, like that was my thing, so I went and got starter decks. I didn't really have anyone to play with though, and I didn't really have anyone to ask about rules and stuff, so I just kind of looked at the cards, and I started reading about like the colors just from just like the packets, like white is the order of law and soldiers and everyone banding together. Like, I was already a huge Power Ranger fan too, so like, teamwork and everything like that, like, yeah, that's my jam!
Yeah.
So I start getting that, I get like the red precon, and I was like, what? So I start mixing these decks together, I'm like, okay, I really like this. It's a white-red deck, it's like fast, it's aggressive, like this is, like, if I actually play, cause I tried to force my brother to play with me and sometimes he actually would, like, yeah, I like playing this actual style. That was right before the original Ravnica came out. So I started seeing other starter decks. I was like, cool, this one's a red-white deck, and this one's a green-white deck. I like white, so I got both of those. I was like, but where's the white-black one? Where's the white-blue one? And so just over the next year, I'd be like, finally, there's the white-black one. There's the white-blue one. And so for a while, those were just kind of the decks I had. I didn't really get a chance to play with them, but I had them.
Nice.
But then, you know, no one to really play with, so I actually kind of fell out of Magic without really beating it in the first place. Hmm. Come back to Scars of Mirrodin, and I'm told, hey, there are people in the college cafeteria playing Magic. So I go ahead and get into there, and I start picking up Magic again, and it's fun. And then EDH comes around. So it's like, okay, now it's just all EDH all the time. Since then, I built decks of every color combination, and one of my favorites is the Narset Jeskai deck I have now, which is essentially a Sunforger deck, which leads into my weird card. You know, this was a really roundabout way of going to my weird card of the week. It's Odds and Ends from the original Dissension. So Odds and Ends is a split card, so you can play either one. For blue and red, you have Odds, which is an instant that says flip a coin. If it comes up heads, counter-target instant or sorcery spell. If it comes up tails, you copy that spell instead, and you can choose new copies for the target.
Hmm.
And then the other side is ends, which is 3 red-white, so it's 5 mana, instant. Target player sacks 2 attacking creatures. And it's one of my favorite Sunforger targets. Because I can go ahead and go, okay, this Genesis Wave for 9 is really, really bad. But it'd be, but wouldn't it be awesome if I had one too?
Yeah.
Like, I go ahead and I do odds on spells that are just so big or so awesome that no matter what the scenario, I'm going to come out ahead because either I just stopped that huge thing or now I have one too. And usually just the copy one is the more preferred one because it's not saying, okay, I'm ahead, you're ahead, these other guys are probably getting pushed aside and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is actually probably one of the first coin flipping cards I've seen possibly ever that does, like, there's no real variance, like, downside to it. Each one of the sides is perfectly valid for probably what you want to do. There's a big scary spell. You either want one yourself, or you want to stop it. And both of those you're probably perfectly fine with.
Usually. If it's a spell where it's like, okay, he's trying to kill my Narset somehow with, like, a Wrath or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just grabbing a hard counter spell. Like, copying the Wrath isn't really what I wanted to look
absolutely
for.
Absolutely, yeah. But so someone goes, Wrath of God, you're like, I'll have one too, thank you. Oh, wait. Damn it.
Now, the other side of it ends.
Storm Count
up. No.
It does. Storm Count to 3.
The other side of that ends is also really useful. You know, there's a lot of, like, Earl stuff and Xur the Enchanter stuff where I can just go ahead and say, okay, let's go ahead and kill these guys. But I've also used it to things like, actually, the last game I played with Narset, and this is a great example of how awesome this can be. There was 3 players left. Me, it was a Jermoka deck, and some other deck, I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. Jermoka player swings 2 creatures at player C and just kills them. But they're still attacking creatures. So I go, okay, kill this thing, and then let's go ahead and Sunforger, and now those 2 guys that just killed him are now dead too. It's one of the greatest things about just knowing rules interactions
mm-hmm.
and being able to work them to your favor.
So you can Sunforger into ends. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Because Oz is a legal target for Sunforger, that automatically makes the other side legal too.
That's pretty cool. That's really powerful. That actually opens up a whole bunch of different options for me now.
Right, cool. and because Oz and Ends are... Oz is an Izzet card and Ends is a Boros card. Jeskai is one of the only decks that you can actually play it in. So Jeskai just becomes one of the ideal Sunforger package decks.
Nice. I just scroll down the Gatherer page that I have open for this, and I just saw there's one ruling sitting here from 2006. It just says, the odds coin flip has no winner or loser, and no player calls heads or tails.
it's the best coin flip ever.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't I talk about a coin flip card that was way better than this? It was
no.
You can only declare it once blockers are declared.
And if you
flip a coin, yeah. if you get a heads, the attacking creature gets +1/+0, and then you draw a card. That's the perfect flips card.
Yeah, it's just like a coin flip card that it doesn't even matter if it works.
Yeah, you just draw a card. It's great.
Anyway, yeah, this is a pretty sick card. And I always love these, you know, the sort of dual guild split cards, which is nice because it, like, sort of, it really increases the number of decks that essentially, like, this one physical card can go in. Although with EDH and color identity, that does become a bit tricky.
A bit tricky, but I feel like when they get around to making 4-color commanders, because 4-color commanders are an inevitability at this point.
Absolutely.
I do feel like they're going to go with the 2 characters on the same card to help represent this, because that's the only way it makes sense flavor-wise.
That would be pretty sick. Also, Eternal Lady, you've got the character who is completely not one color, right?
Or you just do like transform cards.
Right. Yeah, something like that. Or just like a red-blue creature with a green-black activated ability.
Right, that was actually a series of commanders I submitted to the original Make a 4-color Commander contest we were hosting on CommanderCast.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a fair bit of design space, but I'm not sure if Wizards necessarily agrees with us for 4-color commanders.
There's about to be someone.
Yeah, there has to be someone.
I don't know, what I keep hearing about that, the 4-color thing, is that, you know, not as not as powerful as five colors, not as sort of tightly developed as three colors. So it's just, you know, it falls into a difficult space when it comes to design.
Right, and especially when you're sort of going maybe flavor plate. Right, when you're like three colors, you're like, okay, I get it. They're these three colors. And when you go five colors, you're like, fuck it, they're all magic, whatever. It's and then in four colors, you're like, they're like a lot of magic, but not all of it.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard. It was on one of Morrow's, Matt Cavada's joining him for a mailbag episodes.
Mm, yeah.
And I remember because I explicitly asked him what the design philosophy behind four color commanders would be. And they talked about that for a little bit. And I swear, maybe I'm just deluding myself, but I swear for just a second, when Morrow revealed, hey, do you know what my original idea for four color creatures was? Matt goes, what? Morrow says, it was the, guild leaders teamed up together, and they both just kind of giggled. I swear, for a second, they looked at each other and went, ding, light bulb.
Yeah. at least that's what we hope, right? That there was a special moment in that car ride that Mara has written down in a journal somewhere, and it just says, Niv-Mizzet plus...
Obsidat.
Yeah, plus Obsidat. And then just like, a question mark, and a love mark.
And then he writes something, profit in capital letters.
Yeah. It's like, step three, question mark, step four, profit. It's good.
But yeah, all I want is a four or five color tiny leader. And I know it probably won't happen, but I just want to play every single busted card in tiny leaders, because it's the only format I'm not really in.
Oh. See, it'd be hard to have a five color tiny leader with a three... You'd have to have a three mana cost or less card with a variety of activated abilities then, because what else do you do?
Yeah. Hybrid mana?
Yeah.
And activate ability.
Or you go for something like Etched Monstrosity, right? Where it's a colorless casting cost, but there's a five color activated ability.
Hmm. Or, again, transformation card. Like a character who starts as two colors with one color as their activated ability on both sides, but then when they transform, they're the other two colors.
Ooh, we go return to Lorwyn, right? And we have characters that in Lorwyn they're a particular color combination, and in Shadowmoor they're a different color combination.
Like Sig?
Or something like that. I mean, like, in that example, they always share a color, right? Like, like Sig goes from blue-white to blue-black.
Not Ashlyn.
Not Ashlyn. She just goes from mono-red to mono-black because she went, fuck everything.
I thought you were going to say
I still don't know what happened on Lorwyn.
have you listened to the Card Advantage show?
I have listened to the Card Advantage, yeah. And I am still slightly more confused than I was before.
Yeah, I mean, I've read into Lorwyn's story myself, but it's basically just sort of a convoluted mess of... There's a whole bunch of characters, there's kind of a story that links them all together, and all of the characters meet for realistically no reasons.
Much like Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Also the entirety through the segment of the Lorwyn where they were talking about Ashlyn, I kept thinking in my middle of brain, because I'm Scottish myself, that it would be pronounced Aisling, because that would be the original Celtic pronunciation, but whatever. It's fine.
It's funny you say that.
She's Ashlyn because she's fire. Yeah, like ashes.
Yes, I know.
Yes.
But
let's see, it's recent,
pronounced
not right.
Aisling. Aisling.
But you say that, but have you ever watched... I also say this to you, William. Have you guys seen a television show called 8 out of 10 Cats?
Yes.
I have not.
It's a talk show hosted by Jimmy Carr. It's pretty funny. There is a recurring co-host on that who is an Irish lady called Ashley. And it's spelled like Aisling.
Ashling, yeah?
Yeah.
That's pretty sick. That's actually like a pretty nice name.
See, my girlfriend's gonna get confused if I start calling her Aisling.
Yeah. Alright, we are one weird card down.
We'll say that is actually a pretty cool weird card. I might consider getting a copy myself.
Yeah, no, this is nice. And the artwork is like, it's old magic art, but it's still pretty cool. It's just got like this sort of giant Boros Titan with like a skeleton hand, that's what I'm talking about, crushing dudes on one side.
Looks more like a rock hand.
Yeah, yeah. He's like some Boros, like...
He's very blocky.
Yeah, and then we've got this like really creepy looking goblin on the other side. He's like...
He's a goblin electromancer.
Oh man, I don't know. He's giving like a real suggestive look.
He doesn't understand this technology.
I mean...
He's trying to understand.
I mean, what could someone possibly use a phallic-shaped magic wand for?
Yeah, and he's sort of got his tongue out a little bit, and he's like half turned to the camera.
He's just working that shaft. Yeah. There's a bit of white at the end.
And he's like, flip a coin, baby. And you're like, I don't want to. What happens if I get heads? And you're like, yeah. And you're like, oh, what if, what happens if I get tails? And he's like,
that was a joke in Club Dread where it's like, heads or tails? And she's like, heads, and rips off her top. And the other girl's like, what's tails? And she, and the guy's like, you don't want to know.
All right. So who's tackling the weird card next?
Steven, do it.
Okay.
All right, Steven, you're up. Steven.
Volunteered. All right, so I've got, from Future Sight.
Future Sight.
I've got a card called Spellweaver Volute, and it is fucking weird. All right, so it's an enchantment from Future Sight, like I said, for 3 and 2 blue. Enchant instant card in your graveyard.
Of course.
So, like, right off the bat, we're in really weird territory.
Yeah, just the first line. So, whenever you cast a sorcery spell, copy the enchanted instant card. You may cast the copy without paying its mana cost. If you do, exile the enchanted card and attach Spellweaver Volute to another instant card in the graveyard. Hooray!
So, I guess basically what this says is, as long as you have a steady stream of instants in your graveyard, every sorcery you cast is going to have a little bonus attached to it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
That'd be
really
cool.
Why do I feel
cool
like I've heard you guys talk about this one before?
It's something we've maybe mentioned in passing before when we're talking about,
yeah,
like, Future Sight.
I think we got an email from Jason about it.
No, we got it was a comment on our Tapped Out page, I'm pretty sure. Something like that. Someone recommended this card to us before. Yeah.
Shout out to whoever.
fuck it, I'm gonna look it up. I'm gonna look it up right now. On the air, finding it. Where the fuck is the... Damn it. Keep going, guys.
You gotta press T on your keyboard to go to Tapped Out.
So yeah, I'd really like this in... Imagine if this was released in Origins, just the shit that people would throw. But I would love it in Standard.
Why the fuck would they put this in a core set?
Because it's the last core set. It's a hardcore wearing a corset in this corset.
I'm still disappointed that we didn't get any cross-dressing core in the last corset, right? Like cores in corsets in the corset?
Exactly.
I mean, like, it would have made sense too. Like, part of, like, at least 1/10 of this set is in Zendikar.
Yeah, we should have seen some core. Fuck, damn, man. I like core. Here we go. Scorpix on our Tapped Out page recommended Spellweaver Volute as well as Chaos Orb and Steamflogger Boss.
Thank you, Scorpix.
Scorpix.
Can we declare a moratorium on Steamflogger Boss?
I don't even know what it does.
It's a card that's deliberately, like relies on support cards, but it has...
Steamflogger Boss has an effect printed on it that will never, ever actually become a real magic effect.
Oh, that is lovely.
And I guess I'm just gonna...
Don't say never.
Yeah, it's like every time it comes up on, like, Mario's blog, he's like, look, it's... Guys, the joke's gone too far. But I guess just for clarity's sake, Steamflogger Boss is a 3/3 for 3 and a red. He's a Goblin Rigger, which I'm pretty sure is a creature type that only exists on, like, 2 cards, Riggers. I'm pretty sure they eroded Moriok Rigger from the original Mirrodin block to be a Rigger. Other Rigger creatures you control get +1/+0 and have haste. If a Rigger you control would assemble a contraption, it assembles 2 contraptions instead. Whip the X's, pinch the O's. What we're building, no one knows.
You see, you're right on both accounts, and then slight miss on one. The Moriok Rigger is in fact a Rigger now.
Yes.
So Steamflogger Boss has something else besides changelings that it can pump.
Mm-hmm.
The other is that, remember, Aaron Forsythe actually came out and said, yeah, this was a joke card. And that's what's prompting all these questions to actually make it to the point where it's like, okay, we actually have to make this now. We just have to figure out what the fuck it does.
Yeah. There's going to be one card in like a Commander set sometime. Because Commander sets seem to be the set that they make weird cards that don't really go in any other sets, right?
Like True Name Nemesis.
Yeah. Like, let's play quirky design territory.
True Name doesn't go anywhere. Yeah. No one plays that.
So if we see Duretti 2.0, we see it as a Rigger Tribal in the next Commander set.
Or Duretti's +1 is assemble a contraption.
Yeah.
I think the mistake Wizards made was making this a rare. I feel like if this card was an uncommon, people wouldn't have cared about it. But having
that card, which they've admitted is a deliberate joke card, being the rare you get in a pack. One with nothing, you go, well, fuck.
You're like, I have to do, your attention is focused on it, right? Because you're already going into the pack going, ooh, what's my rare? And then you're like,
and there's, wait, this is like, a joke card that they spoke
you're like,
about.
Fucking rigor, man. Steamflogger, boss, what the fuck?
It gives my mutable haste.
This could be people opened this, right? This could have been a Tarmogoyf. Just like, think about that. That could have been an original print Tarmogoyf right in their hands. And instead, they got a Steamflogger boss.
Oh, by the way, have you told the Tarmogoyf story on the podcast? Listen to the story, William. I laughed. And I was right there when it happened.
Okay. All right. So,
I hear groaning. This is going to be a good one.
Full disclosure, right? I now work at a game shop. I work at Good Games Junilo, which I mentioned on the show before. And I finally got a job there, and it's fantastic, and I really, really enjoy it. And it was my birthday on, earlier in July. And my boss, you know, sitting around, he was like, oh, it was your birthday like a couple of days. I'm like, yeah, it was. He's like, oh, have a pack of Modern Masters 2015 for your birthday. Here you go. And you're like, he opens up the box, and there's two packs sitting in there. And he's like, oh, okay, well, fair enough. Two packs left in the box. You take this one, I'll open this one for the store. And I open up my pack. I'm like, oh, okay. It's a free pack anyway, so I'm like, I'm pretty happy. And I'm flicking through. I'm like, oh, okay, I got an Indomitable Archangel. That's not really anything. I've got heaps of these. And I got like a Darksteel Citadel as my foil. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. And then my boss has a look on his face. And he's like looking at this open pack of cards, and he goes, ho, ho, ho. And then he just turns the pack around to me, and he like flicks the back out, and I see foil, it's one and a green, and he goes, woo-hoo. And then he just like flicks open the pack, and there's a foil Tamago there, and he puts it in the air, and he goes, yes! And I'm like, you motherfucker. And he's like, what? And I'm like, that could have been mine. That could have been mine. It was right next to it. It was fucking
but
right next
wasn't.
To it. It was a coin flip. And I got the fucking shit stain side.
Yeah, your spell got counted instead of getting another pack.
Oh. And he loves that story. Like, I mean, my boss loves stories that he can just tell over and over and over again. And anyone who sits down and listens, he has told that story to.
And for those of us that were there.
Yeah.
Like, me and Matt were talking over the counter while this was happening. Just the look on James's face when he pulled the foil from me.
Yeah. And he's like, it just like flicks it out the back.
That is the most heartbreaking thing.
I mean, that's not as bad as what my boss has done at the card shop. Like he's opened foil goys before, and we've all been pretty happy. Like he had this when Modern Masters came out. Mm-hmm. He had this horrible, horrible streak of just opening Modern Masters packs and then leaving them piles for me to collect. Like just all over the pack shelf too. Like. People will buy packs, and then, like, one pack will accidentally flip out, and he'll be like, oh, I've got to open that one. That means something. It means something expensive is going to be here. Oh, fuck, it's just a Comet Storm. And then he'll go through, like, four more packs, and be like, fuck, there's a Comet Storm. Fuck, it's a Comet Storm. Fuck, it's a Comet Storm. Foil Emrakul! Yes, got there! And I'll be like, John, no, stop! Stop! We're losing so much value on this! And I'll be like, but I got the Foil Cryptic Command.
We essentially have this sort of pseudo policy, I guess, at the store. When people come in and they want to basically just play the lottery and start opening Modern Masters packs, right? They don't buy a whole box. They just sit there and they buy individual packs. And you keep going until you hit a mythic, and then you have to stop, right? And we had this chain, like this run of packs the other day, where someone went through 38 packs in a row. Until they hit a mythic.
Was that while I was there?
No, that was another one. That was someone else going through, and they went through like seven packs, and they hit Karn, and then they decided to keep going. We're like, no, you have to stop. And he was like, no, and I just kept flicking through it.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
That's like $500.
Mm-hmm.
How much is that in American dollars?
Let's see. over here, a pack is like $10 American. So that'd be like $300. That's just over the price that you would actually pay for a box.
We are in Australia, so you upscale the prices a fair bit, because our packs go for $16 Australian. Mm. And upscaling that to American, what is that? That's like pretty, like somewhat over $20, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 1.4 Australian dollars to 1 US at the moment.
That's fucking nuts.
You know, we had parity once.
Hmm? We were better than the American dollar once.
Yeah.
And they still charge us $6.50 for a pack of fucking Scars Meriden. So what do I know about anything?
Yeah.
Because I still paid it.
What card were we talking about?
Spell Weaver Volume.
Yeah.
Anyway, Spell Weaver Volume.
It's like a tangents inside of tangents over here. It's fantastic. This is what happens when we haven't recorded for like 3 weeks.
It's okay. We'll just make the next card Charizard, tie it all together.
Yeah. we'll have a sub podcast inside of this one.
And the loser has to leave.
So, how
do you do a sub podcast?
Welcome to SquireCast.
No. We're having a podcast, right? And then you turn around and you set up a microphone and you start recording one behind us.
No, it has to be under the table.
It has to be under the table. Yeah, you do an end of the dungeon podcast, right? And you just grab a microphone, take it underneath the desk, and start recording underneath there.
Spell Weaver Volume.
So I love this card because what's this? I cast Yoga Hops. Well, now I get to dig through time. Find me some more lands.
Yeah. You know what this actually would be pretty sick with, right? Is like, essentially, if most of the instants in your deck were, like, copy effects, right? Like, just like, you know, copy target, instant or sorcery, right? So then basically just every sorcery you cast, you get to cast twice.
Yeah.
Cause you would then spell Weaver Volume, you'd get an instant on top of that, and it was like, yeah, wah, get to copy it. Be sick.
Although you'd eventually, you'd have to not run counterspells, because eventually you would cast a sorcery, and cast a dissolve, and the only thing it could target was the sorcery.
Do you have to cast the instant?
Yes. Wait.
You may cast the copy.
It's a may.
You may cast a copy. I was just reading the thing about that.
There's no feels bad that you only have, like, a counterflux in your graveyard, and you're like, I need to fireball him to win, but I'm gonna counter it myself, damn it.
I
just kind of want to figure out what that art is. Like, from my end, it looks like the tip of that is like some sort of bird head.
Bird head. I gotta bring up this art now. Spell Weaver Volute.
Well, is a volute a thing? Like, is that a type of bird?
Fuck it, I'm gonna look that up. You guys critique this. Actually, this is like a, there's a tube.
It's a penis.
And there's some
Thanks for just coming out and saying
it's a magic dong. I'm sorry.
It's a magic dong with like blue energy ripping around it.
Look at those veins.
Is that what a volute is?
Volute is French for
Please
penis.
Tell me volute is a brand name for something.
No, volute is a spiral scroll-like ornament that forms the basis of the Ionic Order found in the capital of the Ionic Column.
Yeah, have you seen my scroll-like ornament today?
A spiral or twisted formation or object.
I'll show you my spiral and twisted ionic.
Oh, okay, so alright, so basically, apparently what this is like spell architecture in a way. Like you've built like a physical structure of spells, and that allows you to enchant instants in your graveyard. I don't fucking know, man. This is a weird card. It's what I'm fucking
Makes sense about. To me.
Yeah. Holy shit, there's a lot of rulings for this card. Okay. Is there anything interesting here? Bless you.
Sorry.
Good one tight.
I was coughing.
There's a lot of stuff in here that's just sort of like, you know, states a lot of interesting interactions, I guess. The aura will be on the battlefield, attached to a card in a different zone. The aura won't be in your graveyard. The enchanted card won't be on the battlefield. Okay. The first one basically spells out how weird this is. This aura targets and enchants an instant card in a graveyard. This is the first aura that enchants something that's neither a permanent nor a player. It's just like the first ruling is just, yeah, this is the only card that does this. That's pretty funny.
I mean, to be fair, it's like wrapping balloon around air, right? Like you're wrapping something physical and tangible.
Yeah.
As much as enchantments actually can be, around something that's supposed to be like non-tangible.
I mean, that makes complete sense.
I actually quite like that.
This is actually kind of interesting.
As in, it's a magic balloon. That's what it is.
Yeah. Spell Weaver Volute seems actually kind of cool with stuff like Constellation, because the last ruling on the ones here says, okay, Spell Weaver Volute's ability triggers. Then Spell Weaver Volute leaves the battlefield in response. Then the instant card that was enchanted is removed from the graveyard in response. When the Volute's ability resolves, it will check its last existence on the battlefield and identify the enchanted card as the instant card, so the card is copied and control is triggered when you cast it. So basically, like, whenever you cast the actual thing in the graveyard, the Volute actually, like, flickers a little bit. That's kind of cool. So you can sort of use, you know, constellation effects, I guess.
I don't believe it actually works like that. I think it's more like, because state-based actions are checked after the effects are done resolving,
it's actually
more like a meme or a parasite where it's jumping from one host to the other. Okay. It's like, okay, I'm done with you, I'm just gonna go ahead and jump ship to this next guy now.
Alright, yeah, so it like never leaves the battlefield, really. It just stops being enchanted to something and goes, alright, I gotta check something else, there we go, now I'm back on it again. Like, it's just...
Yeah, it's jumping from the burning planet into the blimp.
Right, yeah. Okay. Alright, that makes sense.
Well, it phases from the burning planet to the blimp. Yeah. Because it never leaves the battlefield.
Alright.
Beat me up, Scotty. What's our next card?
Our next card is in honor of you, dear sir.
Did William just, like, speed the podcast along? How did you do that?
I looked up for a second. I'm like, whoa, we're back on track. What the fuck happened?
Well, we have a professional on board, gentlemen.
And then I derailed it. Did you see what I did there?
Well, I think you did that to me in one of the, an earlier episode where I was like, just as a quick tangent, you're like, no.
Alright, Callum, so what is your weird card for this week?
Alright, because we are talking to the Commander Cast Podcasting Champion 2015.
And something.
Earlier, I don't know.
Actually, no, Tom has that title right now.
Okay. Tom. Well, you are the Commander guy on this show. There you go.
Is he...
Right, but Tom technically won the Roto Championship.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He's trying to give you a compliment, but whatever. Let's go past it.
Let's make up more ridiculous titles, but let's first of all get to the weird card of the week.
Alright, my weird card of the week is someone that I've mentioned maybe every single week, but now we're actually going to sit down and talk about it.
It's entirely possible. You might have actually brought up this card, or the deck that this card is the commander of, on probably almost every podcast.
Alright, now you've ruined the surprise.
Okay.
This card is my commander. His name is Norrin the Wary. He's a 2-1, cost a single red from Time Spiral. He's a legendary creature, human warrior. You know, warriors, they like attacking. But Norrin, whenever a player plays a spell or a creature attacks, remove Norrin the Wary from the game. Return it to play under its owner's control at the end of turn. This card is so sexy.
Yeah. You know, I think what I love about this card the most, right, is when you first introduce anyone else to it. Because so many times I've gotten into conversations about your deck, right? Where I'm having a conversation with you or someone else that has played against you, like Neil at the store, and talking about how ridiculous and crazy the deck is and how powerful so many of the effects are in multiplayer games and Commander and stuff like that. And someone goes like, wait, hang on, sorry, what? You said the Commander was like something really powerful, right? I'm like, all right, get this. It's a 2-1 for red that... can't stay on the battlefield for long because it disappears when anything happens. And then they look at you like, what? Wait, that's not... What? And then you go, no, hang on a minute. Think about enter the battlefield abilities or, you know, just like a whole bunch of things. And you start like listing off all these things in the deck. And this guy's really subtly quite interesting.
Yeah, you need to build around him, but it's Commander, so why not? Yes, make 99 cards.
A while ago, I had a... Before Card Academy showed up in my neighborhood, I had a shop I went to called Future of Gaming. We called it Fog of Dusk. And there was a player whose one of his main decks was, in fact, Norrin the Wary. So I've seen firsthand the shenanigans that Norrin the Wary causes. And, oh my god, I have never had headaches like that before.
Like, so many times when you're looking at Callum's board state, in particular, there's a possibility storm, and you already know that's a good start. And you've got things like there's whenever you tap a land during someone else's turn, destroy it. There's a winter orb on the battlefield. There's you know that there's like maybe Yokel Hops and Obliterate somewhere stacked in the deck. Yeah. And
I suddenly have an Afara, and my opponent has a Confusion in the ranks.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a Confusion in the ranks. And, it's definitely interesting. And, like, you can, I mean, I've seen games won by you when you, like, you wipe out everything except Norrin and the Possibility Storm. And then somehow you cast an enchantment, Purphoros hits the battlefield. And while everyone is just struggling to finally come back from the game, it's like, attack with Norrin, you take two. Attack with Norrin, you take two. Attack with Norrin, you take two. Because he keeps flickering and it's dealing two to everyone. And you just sort of mop up what's left.
Yeah, and it's just so fun introducing people to this deck, because like you said, they read Norrin, and he can't attack, he can't block, he can't stay on the field. It's like, why is that your commander? You can't win with commander damage. I was like, I don't need to win with commander damage. My opponents will concede. Like, I think Matt's conceded to this maybe a half dozen times just because he doesn't want to have to play it out.
Yeah, whenever a Thieves Auction or maybe a Scrambleverse
Time Sifter. That's on the battlefield. Like,
I fucking hate Time Sifter. I hate Time Sifter. Ugh. God damn it. I'm like, whenever I think about Norrin, I get, like, a warm feeling in my heart, but then my heart, like, has palpitations. So it's like, it's a complicated feeling.
Warm feeling in the chest, wet feeling in the pants.
Yeah.
And not like the pleasant lovemaking kind either.
But our topic for this week that we'll eventually get into after we, you know, go through our weird card of the week after, like, fucking an hour or something. Yeah, holy shit, we've been recording for an hour and 7 minutes. So people listening to the podcast, figure out how much we were preambling before that by looking at your current time on the podcast. You essentially almost completely gone away from any kind of multiplayer politics in general, right? Your deck is chaotic, and unique things happen every single game, and it's not entirely within your control. Right.
Yeah, I don't need to make a plan because my cards make their own plans.
Right, and
you can work with me, but I can't guarantee it's going to end up in your favor.
Right, and they change everyone else's plans, right? So like, so the politics of a multiplayer game, sort of struggle to exist around Norrin. He's not really a part of them. But no, it's cool.
We got through that quickly.
Yeah. I think we're all out of tangents, right?
I think Norrin himself,
I'm sure we can dig around and find a few more.
Yeah. But what I was going to say, I don't think Norrin on his own is an interesting card. I think what makes him interesting is the interactions he has with other things, you know. Mm-hmm. Fucking around with Possibility Storm and fucking around with basically anything in Callum's deck, really.
Yeah. I just like the idea that he dodges most forms of removal.
Yeah. And then someone thinks they're clever and they go, okay, fine. Shock, alright, he blinks out. In response, Lightning Bolt? Well, actually that triggers anyway, so you've just wasted two spells, you idiot.
In response, tap Jeskai, I guess?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, how does Norrin feel about sudden shock? Split second doesn't stop.
Triggered abilities will still resolve.
Right, there we go.
Norrin, however, is terrified by Particle Pyromancer.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Matt,
what?
What's your weird card of the week?
I have a weird card. What? Okay, yeah, alright. My weird card of the week for this week, is a card that I found, amongst just a massive assorted pile of stuff at my job. And it is from, I should probably look at where it's from. It's from Antiquities.
Lovely.
Ooh.
So I had an Antiquity card just sitting around. And it's called Phyrexian Gremlins, and for 2 and a black, it's a 1/1. Summon Gremlins, or more specifically, creature type Gremlin. Okay, so let me read the Oracle text, because it's a bit weird now. Okay. You may choose not to untap Phyrexian Gremlins during your untap step. Good start. Fantastic. Tap. Tap target artifact. It doesn't untap during its controller's untap step for as long as Phyrexian Gremlins remains tapped. Which is interesting, because this is basically as close to removal, I guess, for artifacts that black basically ever gets. And it's really bad.
It's a significantly worse Miracle Ride Barret. The legendary creature that steals stuff.
It's not the worst thing I've seen.
No, it's not. And we've definitely tackled a lot, like, worse things on this show. And there are some, you know, powerful artifacts that keeping them tapped down, essentially for as long as you control the gremlins, that's pretty powerful. Something
like a worm coil.
Like a worm coil, or maybe like a Kuldotha Forge Master, right? Like, that would be pretty good to keep tapped down.
Worm coil needs to be free.
A trading post.
A trading post, something like that. Yeah, like something with an interesting tap ability or something that's enormous, like a Blightsteel Colossus, right?
Mindslaver.
Mind Slayer, or in the other direction, something like Howling Mine or Font of Mythos.
Right,
if they're untapped, only you get to draw the cards.
Yeah.
Does Font of Mythos do
pretty good?
I know Howling Mine does, yeah. I assume that Font of Mythos.
I know Howling Mine and Winter Orb have that line of text that as long as they're tapped, they're basically turned off. Because
Font doesn't have that writer.
Yeah. For a period of time in Magic, whenever an artifact was tapped, it was like off. Like, there was actually an off switch, essentially, on all artifacts, that whenever they went sideways, it and they turned off.
Ye old mono artifacts.
Off by attacking.
Right.
So artifact creatures attacked in the off state.
Essentially, they attacked, went into, like, slumber a little bit, and then your upkeep, they went, and they, like, booted back up again. But, so with Howling Mine, you could, like, tap it on your opponent's turn so that they wouldn't draw any cards.
Yeah, I do that with my Duretti deck using Lodestone Mirror.
Yeah.
So yeah. Just during each upkeep, I just tap it during my opponent's
turn. Yeah, so prominent old artifacts from that time, like Winter Orb and Howling Mine, still have that line of text because they want to sort of keep the same tactical power, I guess, they still had, where you could Winter Orb and make sure your opponent doesn't, you know, really basically untap their lands, and then you're like, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, like, tap my Winter Orb so that I can untap all of my things. It's pretty cool.
Be that as it may, why is this in black? It's such a blue effect.
Is it though?
Was it though?
Well, no, just blue, mono blue.
No, I mean,
not blue red.
As much as black essentially doesn't interact with artifacts, like, ever, really. I actually kinda like this effect in Magic, like, in black, really, because the art kind of sells it for me. It's derpy as hell, but I love it. Because it's just got these tiny little gremlin things, like sort of imps and goblins in the moonlight on some random plane, just like fucking around with machinery. And I'm guessing basically like sort of the flavor of this card is that, say you've got like, you know, a mechanical contraption or a giant robot. These little guys just get all up in there and just piss it off, or like just muck around with shit so that it just doesn't work. Right? So black, you know, being sort of the color that it is gonna try its best to eliminate something, and if it can't, it's just gonna like cripple it. So it's just gonna send these little gremlins in, right? And they're just gonna get all up in the machine's bits, and maybe they'll die. Because someone's probably going to try and kill the gremlins, but at the very least, they're just going to, like, keep this thing tapped for a turn.
Alright, fair enough.
You can think of it as kind of just a black mage somehow sending these little red guys over to mess with the thing.
Yeah, I mean, right? Honestly, when I say it out loud, it actually sounds more red than black, right? Like, in that it's just...
Right, like, blue is the tapping things down and keeping them from untapping. Mm-hmm. Red is the, I'm gonna go ahead and mess with this thing, and oops, I accidentally broke it. Or, right. I'm trying to get this thing to work, and I'm smashing, it's like you're smashing the remote on the desk to try and get the remote to work, but then you accidentally break your remote.
Right. Like, I mean, if this had then the line of text, like sort of Marique Me Barrett? Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know.
Anyway, whatever.
Right there.
That she also has, where, whenever Freshing Gremlins, like, leaves the battlefield, that artifact then gets destroyed. That would be super red, right? That they just go and like mess in all of the shit and then, oh, I broke it. Oops.
Yeah.
But that'd be cool. I like this. I remember just sorting through a whole bunch of stuff and it was like mixed in with like Shards of Alara commons. And then all of a sudden there's just these derpy little Phyrexian gremlins that are just like chilling there. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
So I have a question about the Errata versus the original.
Yeah.
In the original, all it says is tap gremlins to tap target artifact.
Yeah.
Does that get around summoning sickness, or is that just the way it used to
no,
be?
No, it's just the way it used to be. They didn't have a tap symbol at this time in Magic. So anything that like did something like this was just spelled out. Like the original text reads, like, first sentence, tap gremlin to tap an artifact. New sentence. As long as gremlin remains tapped and in play, the artifact does not untap as normal during its controller's untap step. You may choose not to untap gremlins during your untap step. Like, it's actually fairly spelled out for a card of its time, but the first sentence is just, there's no tap symbol. It just says, tap to tap an artifact.
Yeah, we don't get the tap symbol until they come out with revised.
Mm-hmm. And even then it went through a couple of revisions. after that, yeah.
So Rabbi's had to go through revisions? Or?
Yes, it did.
Wow, they did a fucking good job then, didn't they?
But honestly, it seems like the thing I'm doing today is just reading Gatherer rulings, because there are some fantastic ones, and there's some great nuggets hidden away in this. And I love that there's a 2004 ruling for this card that they clearly just busted out in like 2 seconds, because all it says is, can target a tapped artifact. That's it. 4 words. Can target, or 5 words even, can target a tapped artifact. Which is cool, I guess.
I mean, they could have made that 4 words. They just made it can tap target artifacts.
It just says, tapped artifact? Yes.
quick question. If you were to get a Microsynth Lattice out, and turn these gremlins into an artifact, could they tap themselves and then just not ever untap?
Yes, because they can target tapped artifacts.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
I mean, because then they'd be tapped down by their own effect rather than... So even though it says you may choose not to untap it, it wouldn't untap because it's tapping itself. You've just broken your own gremlins. They've climbed inside themselves.
Welcome to the machine.
Now just picturing that in my head, I'm like, you know, the Microsynth Lattice like sweeps over the field and whatever. All the gremlins, they look down at their bodies and they're all metallic and they're like, whoa. And just the Black Mage looks at one of the gremlins and points to the other gremlin and just says, get him. And then they just sort of get into a brawl and they're like wrestling on the ground like, and they're just not letting each other get up.
So that's what's happening. See, but you can screw up everything.
I don't know. I kind of like this card. It's not great, but the effect is unique and pretty interesting. Although, of course, it only works for like a, you know, subsection of things.
Artifacts that need to tap to do their ability.
Yeah, or need to attack, basically. Mm. And, of course, it's super easy to kill.
Yeah. Wait, so it's a 1-1?
It's a 1-1.
Juan.
It's a 1-1 for 3.
Mm. So this dies to Languish.
This dies to everything.
1-1 or 4-3?
That doesn't work when you're making the hand motions as well, because, again, it's an audio podcast.
I said 1-1, 4-3. Is that... American Sign Language makes me sad because it's not the same as Australian Sign Language. I can only learn so much sign language, damn it.
Of course, I can't demonstrate this on an audio podcast, but I only know 2, like, instances of Australian Sign Language. And that's fuck you, fuck the lot of you. That's it. That's all I know. That's all I know how to say. It's basically, you take your middle finger, I guess I'm gonna explain this. You take your middle finger, right, like, so you flip someone off. But you are...
That's okay. In my mind, he is making beautiful gestures that make people who use the American Sign Language system...
And then just say, fuck a lot of you. Tears of fury. Do that with both hands, point at the same thing, and then just sweep them outwards. So it's just, fuck you, fuck the lot of you.
When you're deaf and really angry.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, even if I didn't know sign language, and someone... Instead of flipping me off, just pointed at
me. I'm pretty sure that one's universal.
They flipped off finger and then went, like, pointed them and then flicked them out. I would know what they were saying. And it had an angry expression on their face and went, And it's like, yeah, I know what you're saying.
A lot of it's very intuitive. I love that there's one of the signs for understanding, right? It's just, you know, I understand is basically holding your fist next to your head and then flicking your finger outwards like a light bulb. Just going, hey, I get that.
That's good. Or poop, right? Where you just put your thumb in your closed fist and then plop it out the bottom.
You Australians have a beautiful language.
Tangent. Although, I will say though, the vast majority of the sign language I know is mostly to apologize for the fact that I'm a shit nurse.
You're a shit nurse?
See, the joke didn't carry across though, because you just did the sign language for poo.
Yeah, but I still emphasize shit with my voice. I'm a radio professional.
Yeah, all this talking about poo is... caused a movement. I felt it. I felt it deep inside me.
Do you want to leave?
No, I'm okay. I think I'll be good. William, I'm so sorry. Would you like to say anything?
Hello, so sorry. I'm William. I don't believe we've met.
All right. That's okay. That is an hour and 21 minutes into the recording. We are 4 weird cards down. I think it's time to tackle our main segment.
This is almost as bad as when we, like, episode 2 when we did the Commanders for 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to the end of, we got 5 done in an hour and a half. And we're like, okay, now let's breeze through the rest. It took us another hour.
I went, alright, let's talk about 10 cards. 10 cards will not take us that long. No.
Yeah, see, I do, 5 cards does play long enough. See, mm-hmm. we get plenty of tangents on my podcast too. Yeah. The problem is, their tangents are infinitely more interesting than anything I would get. My job isn't really to talk so much as it is to facilitate talking.
Yeah.
So I'm used to just kind of sitting here and being like, okay, uh-huh, uh-huh. So I've gotten to the point where I can actually just kind of passively listen to the conversation, know where to do the appropriate uh-huhs and yes and nots and pose for questions without actually knowing what the fuck we're talking about.
I can respect that. That's a talent, I would say.
Just uh-huh, yes. Brilliant. Fantastic.
Really? Okay. You're kidding.
What do you mean? My dad died. Yeah.
It's just like, it's like, William, what is your thought on trombones? You're like, fantastic.
Well, see, it actually takes just a little more skill to that, because you actually have to passively understand the tone, because you're not just listening. You can kind of ignore the words, but you still kind of pick up like keywords. Mm-hmm. It's more like you're listening to the tone and the just kind of idea of what they're saying.
Yeah, and you also,
and as long as you're the one asking the questions, you can keep the conversation moving and act like you're an active participant.
Right, and you also don't want to give a response that's like too curt as well. Like if someone's just sort of like, they're talking, then you just go, yup. There's like a second of silence after that where everyone goes, okay, all right. And then they go into like whatever they're saying after that. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely sort of a bit of nuance there.
Although, on that note, William, how do you feel about trombones?
I mean, it was one of Lanky's instruments in Donkey Kong 64. And unfortunately, back then, when my family was doing, like, our get-together playthrough family time, where we would all take a con and play through it, I really wanted Diddy, but no, I got stuck with Lanky, so...
Man, Lanky is sick. He can Lanky, walk on his hands.
Like, I'm into Lanky now. But like at the time, like I want to be Diddy. I want to be the guy who has a jetpack and has a guitar and little peanut pop guns.
Yeah.
But instead I got this guy with like this weird blow dart thing.
I was always Chunky. I like Chunky Kong. He was pretty sick.
Yeah, Chunky was the other one.
He had a pineapple launcher. It was sick.
He did. So, and his final fight with K. Rool was the best too, because you just got huge and then you punched him.
Yeah. I like Chunky Kong. He's just simple and to the point. He's just gonna punch you.
Right. I wish they would bring him back somehow.
Like trombones.
No.
I don't know what happened. Like, that was an instant tangent. It was just, how do you feel about trombones? Well, let's talk about Diddy.
I did really like the music that they used for Lanky's trombone, though.
Yeah. It's pretty, like, I've been picking up Donkey Kong 64 countless times over the years, and it, like, every single time I pop it on, and I hear the DK rap, oh, shit gets real.
Take it to the fridge.
Yeah. It's like, here we go.
Well, see, what's even best is when there was a post on Tumblr about, it was a screen cap of 4chan, where they did the Donkey Kong rap with Fire Emblem Lords.
Okay.
And that was amazing.
Performing for you.
Now I've got to find it.
If you know the words, you can join in too.
Honestly, I think I saw that.
Yeah.
I spent too much time.
Put your hands together if you wanna clap. And we'll take you through this monkey rap. I said DK.
DK.
Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
DK.
Donkey Kong is here.
Yeah. It's good.
He's back again and about time too. He's the first member of the DK crew.
DK.
Damn, I was going straight into Chunky's.
It's good. Oh wow, this is... Wow.
This was on V, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you've played the games, you can join in too. So just claim your waifus if you want to fap as we take you through this emblem rap.
Wow.
I mean, to be fair, they have some top tier waifus in here. Like, Ike is just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Fuck it, I just...
So we were talking about magic.
Yeah, I scroll right down to Lucina and I'm like, yeah, I'm not gonna read this out. She has...
I feel like we should just have a day where we... Just talk. Cause...
You do that.
No, I don't, you two. I'm talking about William.
What the fuck do you
man.
Think we're doing right now?
the more I know about William, the more I want to know.
Well, maybe you should just listen to CommanderCast, right?
You listen to me, listen to other people talk, and then you go into the dangly bits, and then that's where I actually talk.
Yeah, and it's mostly just Calvin cutting together your flubs. It's great.
Our flubs, our anime discussion, it's got a bit of everything.
Yeah, me cutting together, you know, the one time I was on the show, it's just like, hey, Matt, what? Say, back that ass up. And I'm like, back that ass up. And then he just, like, cuts it together. And, it was fantastic listening to that. He just, as a complete tangent, he was like, hey, Matt, what? He's like, can you say something for me? Sure. Back that ass up. Back that ass up? Calvin's a good guy. I like Calvin. I wish we had a Calvin on this show. Right. Could just be like, Calvin, edit, go.
I've got Calum. That's close enough, right?
Yeah, I'm not great at editing because I've edited two episodes. One turned out complete garbage. The other one, Matt wasn't on it. So I spent the entire time having to level it out the audio levels.
Mm-hmm.
Because our third co-host for the day, Chris, was super quiet.
Yeah, he was. He was also sitting directly next to you, opening packs.
He was opening Fate Reforged box.
That annoyed me so much. I was just getting so mad at him. Just sitting there opening packs and not contributing to fucking anything. Damn it, Chris. We do love Chris, but he's a very, very taciturn man, you know.
He is very classically Australian.
Yeah.
He's here in the middle of a conversation just...
Oh,
and sweet. Now in classic podcast fashion, let's go ahead and move on to our topic, shall we?
Main segment time. Yeah, all right, let's kick into it. Here we go. All right, so with, of course, our commander guest host this week, we're going to be talking about multiplayer. Multiplayer politics, just generally multiplayer in general, cool multiplayer formats we've played in the past, and, you know, what changes about Magic moving from 2-player to 36-player.
don't tell me on that, because we actually got close to having the 36 people at college once.
Seriously?
Let me just say that old school Orzhov rocks in that environment. It's each of your opponents loses a life on your upkeep, and you gain that much. Oh, I guess I just got 16 life.
Oh, extort. Extort.
No, not even extort. Like, this was before extort. Like, Agent of Mass used to be a thing.
Yeah. I mean,
ow.
That's good.
Or even some, like, Grey Merchant of Asphodel now.
Oh, dude. Like, anything that says each opponent would just scale up in there. But anyway, multiplayer, right? I mean, look, we're very, very, like, multiplayer was sort of how we really started playing the game, right? Because when we got into Magic, there wasn't just us and someone else. There was us, someone else, another friend, maybe another friend as well. And you're hanging out with multiple people at the same time. You can't just really, like, hey, you and me, we're going to play, and then everyone else is going to, like, watch. And you can sort of do that sometimes, but it's not really always the most fun. And multiplayer scales up basically everything in Magic. The time it takes for turns, the power of effects, and sort of how much repercussions your dumb mistakes have as well. And it's fantastic. I'm a big fan of multiplayer, just in general. And anytime where we get to have a multiplayer experience, maybe with a unique format, especially with Commander with some sort of tweak on it, always down for it.
Plunges, chaos. And it also gives us the opportunity to try out new formats that we've never really tried before,
yeah.
Like Coup d'Etat that we did one time.
Yes, the Squire Cast proprietary format.
It's a Commander deck versus three Tiny Leaders decks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm still actually working on my variation of that. The white, red, and black decks are to the point where I like them. Still gotta work on those green and blue decks, though.
Mm-hmm. And you were gonna be facing them off against the colorless deck, right?
Yeah, the Kozilek deck.
Yeah. That'd be pretty sick.
Man versus the machine. I like it.
Kozilek isn't an artifact, dude.
It's time to rage against the machines.
So, multiplayer is definitely the big selling point for me on Magic. Hmm. Just being like, because I'm a very social. The thing that I love most about games are just interacting with people. I love drafting on Modo just because it's a convenient way to get a draft fired, and I'm so busy on Friday now that I can't actually just drop work to start drafting with everyone else, even though everyone asks, hey, William, are you drafting this week? Or, hey, are you playing Mon this week? Or stuff like that.
Yeah.
So getting the face-to-face interaction was a lot of my first experiences, and it's a lot of why I never really got when I had my whole origin story tangent at the beginning of the show, it's why I never really got a chance to continue Magic because I just didn't have people to play with. So now when I actually have a group to play with, it starts drawing me in. You know, college, it's where I met some people, it's where I made some friends, it's where I became better friends with a couple of people I didn't know because I was able to bring them into this with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one of the things that you... my origin story also had the fact that I love to play like the fast and aggressive decks. So learning to play Magic in a multiplayer setting, you also get to learn the politics and the stuff of that nature. You know, if you listen to, if you follow Mauro or follow his blog, he talks about like how he's not into Commander because he's not into like the multiplayer politic aspect. And when I started playing, I was that way too. Like, I fucking hated politics. Like, Dude, you just convinced them to wipe out my entire team. Like, why would you do that? Like, why can't you just do the technical stuff?
I mean, dude, I know exactly what you're talking about, especially because Steven and fucking friend of the show Robbie, who has been on a couple of times, Robbie has this like prolific tactic he does every single time. When the moment shit goes bad for him, he turns to the person next to him or to Steven and goes, Alliance? Alliance, right? Alliance. And it's like every single time, maybe like 3 or 4 turns into the game, something goes slightly wrong, and he's like, alright, we're teaming up.
Yeah. Oh no, okay. I missed my land drop. Alliance. Alliance.
Yeah, and he'll go back on that alliance, he'll make alliances with everyone else at the table, like it doesn't really mean anything. It's just like, he's basically announcing the table, he's like, alright, shit's fucked. You are in a slightly better position than me. I would like to mooch off your success, please.
Yeah. And that's, yep, that's fun.
Right.
I feel like we're all aware of the politics aspect of it. It's just that some of us aren't very good at it. Myself and
right,
Bobby are probably the two biggest culprits here.
Right. Here's the thing though. When you're so vehement against the political thing and like how it's always the bane of you in these games where I lost because I got politicked out, like people were ganging up on me or anything like that. But then when you actually start playing the game and you start winning, you have that Tyrion moment from Game of Thrones where it's like, I'm good at this game. I like playing this game. Ooh, I do love this game. And like, I've won games before. Well, I had no business winning, but I won them because I was able to talk myself out of the situation. I had the reputation of having, we'll get into this in a bit, but I had this reputation of kind of being a retaliation player, or just the player who always has something up, where it's like, if you attack me, then I'm hitting the nuclear button, and everything's going to hell. So like, I've had people intimidated enough, and usually it's just newer players, or friends I have, or people who have been burned particularly hard on something I've had, and they go, I don't like the way he's smiling. I'm not going to attack.
Yeah. See, I have the exact same problem in Magic that I do in stuff like Mario Kart, where I get out to an early lead as quickly as I can, and I establish myself as like, all right, bitches, I'm here. I play like Zergo, I'm smacking with Zergo, I'm already crunching face, and before people are really getting time to like establish themselves, I'm already the threat, so that's like immediately the theme for the first couple of turns after that.
It's everyone do Matt in,
basically. It's like, okay, let's get into this game. Ho, Matt's punching me in the face. Okay, I better deal with that then. And, I mean, it does the exact same thing that most often happens in Mario Kart, right? You get out into first, and then everyone else all of a sudden has better power-ups for the rest of the game from you, and you're surviving on bananas and green shells that you're trying to aim backwards, and, then eventually, like, coming around to the last corner, you get hit by like a red shell, and then you're all fucked, and you come forth, and you're like, oh, great, that was fantastic.
I mean, the good news is they've at least provided you with a rare item that can somehow negate the blue shell.
Yeah,
unfortunately, Jason 7 never seem to get it unless you're in 12.
Yeah. I always get the horn, and then for like a large period of time, I'm like holding onto it, and I'm like, okay, I will keep hold of this. Oh my god. I can't be fucked. And I just blast it off, and then, like, a minute later, I'll get hit by a blue shell. Like, motherfucker!
I think my favorite part about Mario Kart Wii, because this was before the horn, was that you could just avoid the blue shell if you knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as it started arcing upwards, if you had a mushroom, you could just boost out of the blast range.
That's pretty cool.
Now see, this is actually relevant to kind of bring it back to our topic. Because there is kind of what I've done a lot more lately with my multiplayer games in Magic, where I've had like this rider clause. Like one of my favorite tricks with the blue shell was to get far high enough that I could be going, but once I heard that blue shell, you know, I started hitting the brakes.
Yeah, you just like slam on the brakes.
Just watch someone zoom past me, and the shell automatically just zooms past me and heads straight for them.
Or even better, is like you just slam on the brakes, and the second and third are like right behind you, and they all get caught in the blast radius, and it's fantastic.
Right. Oh, when I've been playing multiplayer Magic, you know, I'm going to go ahead and link you to one of my favorite decks recently, and she's kind of a recent iteration. Farika, which I call Devotion to Multiplayer. There's a lot of effects in here that get better with more people. You know, stuff like Grey Merch of Avid Fidel, Verdant Force, you know, stuff that just says for each player or during each opponent's upkeep or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the thing I love about this deck is it's very much a sit back deck and just kind of let people do what they do. It's very much a Russia or Korea, hey, let's go ahead and set up a bunch of stuff to dissuade people from actually attacking us, but let's go ahead and just kind of wheedle our way into everyone else's game plan. A lot of things, you know, my girlfriend got incredibly mad at me one point when she swung with what would have been lethal damage with her Earl deck, but I went and gave that player a snake. Just a little one death touch snake. And she got so mad at me, she started saying, well, you just gave them something to hose me, like, and I'm like, well, I'm not making them block with a snake.
Yeah.
I'm just giving them weapons. Like, I'm not telling them what they can or can't do with it. I'm just giving them stuff. Like, just, she can't.
Yeah, like, she can, go ahead.
She can block with it if she wants, but I'm not telling her she has to block.
Yeah, you're like, Super Nation A is attacking Minor Nation C, and you just sort of, under the table, you're like, here. Have some weapons. And you know, the Super Nation's like, wait, whoa. What are you doing? And you're like, I'm not asking them to fire them. Just here you go. Have some weapons.
Please take. We're just snake. Evening the odds a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Please brandish this snake at your mortal opponents.
Yeah. Giant right. Monstrosity charging down the hill, and you just throw the snake at some guy, and here, catch! And you catch it in his hand, he's holding it like a fucking staff. He's like, yeah, I got this.
See, for all my talk about, you know, just trolling the game, that's really what I do with Norrin.
Mm-hmm.
That I give every player the tools to succeed if they know how to work it.
Yeah, I mean, I've described your deck a lot of times as a obstacle course rather than like, you know, like a gauntlet sort of thing. It's like you set up the hoops that you want everyone to jump through, and certain people's decks are, you know, they go through certain hoops easier, right? You know, one of your better ways to stop attacking against you is something like a Kobold of Care Keep, right? Where you can just pop out a 0/1 and block anything.
But I mean, even something like Heatstroke, mm-hmm. which is an enchantment for 2 and a red, at the end of combat, destroy all creatures that blocked or were blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something that affects the entire board equally.
Yeah.
And makes people think twice about maybe attacking if someone can flash something in or blah,
right.
blah, blah.
Right, exactly. So something with like Kobolds of Care Keep, you can often just sort of sit behind the ramparts kind of thing and be like, look, I'm not going to do anything to you. I'm just going to sit here, right? And, you know, you like, here, like just sort of, you pull up the defenses a little bit and you give everyone else a whole bunch of just like crippling diseases and you just kind of go, alright, go.
Yeah.
Fight amongst yourselves.
And I won't say I'm the best at politics, but I don't think I'm awful.
No.
But in every single game, there seems to be a turn where Matt, or Stephen, but mostly Matt, decides, I don't have to deal with Callum's bullshit anymore. I'm going to put all my effort into killing him.
Right. And
yeah. See, and that's kind of the fallacy with relying solely on just, you know, talking and interacting. That's a powerful political tool, don't get me wrong. But when you threaten someone, like, if you attack me, I'm going to mess your shit up. The moment that they go, you know what, I don't care, I'm just going to YOLO it and actually attack you, that's when it actually messes with you. You know, like, how many of you saw, like, the last couple episodes of Daredevil from Netflix?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
I watched the shit out of that. Ugh.
Okay, so attempting something, I guess it's kind of a minor spoiler, but there's someone who's trying to blackmail Fisk, into his own personal safety. Like, hey, I've got this thing over you. If you kill me, then your whole operation goes up in smoke. So they think they have Fisk. They think they have him by the nuts. But then Fisk is like, well, yeah, but fuck you. And Fisk just kills the guy. And it's like, well, you called his bluff and you got burned for it. Like, and there's that episode earlier where the other guy had taken the girl. And he's trying to talk his way out of actually getting shot and killed by her. And he calls her bluff. And she actually shoots. And it's like, well, what now, fucker? So, politicalness, in terms of talking, isn't the only way that you can actually be political and influence the game.
Politicality.
Now, with Farika, I had this whole, hey, if you want assistance, you can pray to God and all that, because in this instance when I'm playing this deck, I take the role of God. Very presumptuous.
Right.
But at least you're humble about it.
You're nice and, like, subtle in your smitings. It's good.
Right. Like I'm not actively trying to go out for people who aren't attacking me. Like, maybe if something's really threatening my game plan, I'll go ahead and take care of something. But in general, part of the power of just letting people actually play their game plan is that you force everyone else to deal with it. Now, like, with Ashley and her Earl deck, if Earl's getting out of control, then I might have to provide some divine intervention, well, with being God and all. But before that, I force the other players to deal with it. Like, if Earl starts being on someone and he actually just ends up wiping out a player, well, okay, that's one less person for me to wipe out. But while that person is being beaten down, they're doing everything they can to stay alive, which means that's resources pointing towards the person who's attacking them, which is also less resources against me. It's like, this isn't even a part where you have to say anything. It can just be playing the game with what moves you make.
Right, and often the best play to take in a multiplayer game is to be the most, like, in the background, right? Like, if you can fade into the wallpaper, you're probably setting yourself up pretty damn well for the rest of the game. If people just ignore you, right? You're not open to attacking, like, you're to the point that you're like, oh, that's a tasty morsel, I'm just gonna smack into them, they clearly have nothing. But you're also not establishing some stuff out that people decide they want to deal with you. After everyone else has mopped up each other, that's when you start dropping the haymakers and just take over the game. But unfortunately, I find myself never in that role because I'm way too easily, motivated to just really start getting things going. I love attacking with massive creatures and, wiping the board whenever I can, basically.
No, absolutely, and I feel on that. Because remember, some of my favorite decks are still things like Kalia or Aurelia or Atarka. Oh, God, do I love Atarka. Just
one-two-shot Dragon Lord.
I'm talking about World Renderer. I love Dragonlord, and I kept going back and forth between the two for a little while. But having a dragon that could come out of nowhere and eat people in one or two bites, like, there's something incredibly satisfying about that, despite the fact that I usually don't like one and two card combo type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about being the aggressor is that you can do this in multiplayer. You can. But you have to keep in mind who you're targeting and how fast you actually going about it. Because if you're going to go fast, then you better be going so fast that people can't actually handle you. You know, it's like when the Nazis started invading all of Europe. It's Blitzkrieg. You're attacking so fast and so swiftly that people just can't deal with you. And that's a lot of what Kalia has. She comes down, she starts dropping really big angels and demons. So, like, if you miss that one window where Kalia is sitting out for one turn and you don't have your answers, well, then shit's about to get wrecked until someone can top deck into a Wrath. And even when you do, I had the Boros Charm to save my field.
Yeah, I mean, I know probably from experience here that if you decide to be the aggressor early on, you got to do it fantastically. And you have to do it, like, so efficiently and so well that there is no chink in your armor. Because if there is, people are going to find it. But what I'm saying is if there is an opening, and you're clearly the aggressor, people will take the opening.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why, I don't want to say that's exactly why I go out of my way to not be the aggressor, because I'm kind of a retaliatory guy, just in general. That's why I play control. But even when I have, like, the nuts, if I have confusion in the ranks and Possibility Storm and Heatstroke and Price of Glory, like, all these cool enchantments, which is my game plan, Game of Chaos even, I won't run all those out just because that automatically puts a target on me.
Right.
And I don't have creatures to attack or block with. I run maybe 7 in my entire deck.
Yeah. And a lot of them essentially have pseudo dash.
Yeah.
Right? That they bounce at the end of the turn, yeah. So you often put out maybe one or two so that you people go, ooh, those are bad. And then eventually if there's like a deal with, you can put out more. But if you put out, you know, all 8 at once, like all, you know, like boom, 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 scary enchantments, the assembly of them all can make you a lot more threatening. So that's another thing as well that I find in multiplayer is quite an undervalued tool, is knowing when to hold back just a little bit on what you're doing, not like completely invest. And I'm sorry, Stephen, that I look at you when I said that.
I know I do that.
Because I know I've caught you out a lot of times when you've completely overinvested in something.
Yeah.
And I have blown you out of the water completely with a route at instant speed.
And where I've gone, alright, Master and Wanderer, lots of things, still have 10 mana, alright, let's pay for all the stuff before I attack, because he can't possibly have anything in reserve.
Yeah.
And then he did.
And then I did, yeah.
So, I'm not very good at the politics thing. I'm not very good at the Magic the Gathering thing.
I mean, you're a Timmy through and through.
I have a terrible issue with double-crossing people. If you look at me and you say alliance, you will be attacked on your next turn by me. I can't help myself. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. See, that's the thing about alliances. You know, performing these somewhat choose. It's a given that at some point the alliance is going to be broken, especially when it's just down to you and the other guy. I'm not a fan of the, hey, let's go back to back badasses and take out this horde around us until everything else is gone. Like, no, it's more the politics that I tend to prefer in this whole bartering thing. It's more like, hey, can you really deal with that? Okay, no, I'll take care of that. Or, hey, can you take care of this, buddy? Can you handle this for me? There's also, but the thing that's always gotten more for me is, we play a bit of the Aes Sedai game. If any of you or your listeners have read the Wheel of Time series.
No, where I'm not familiar with that.
Alright, so the Aes Sedai are essentially the mages of the world. Like, they're the only ones who can actually perform magic. But they're bound by these magic oaths in order to get people to trust them that say they can't, like, make magic weapons for men to slaughter men. They can't actually use their magic to hurt anyone unless they're in danger. And they also can't lie. So they've gotten really good at spinning the truth. Where it's like, okay, I'm asking you questions about your field or your graveyard, or I'm just like, hey, can you deal with this creature? And I go, no, I can't. Or people go, you know, that might actually be the truth. But what I might actually mean is, I can't deal with it right now because I'm waiting for you to play this one thing. Or I'm asking about, like, creatures in your graveyard. I'm asking, like, what creatures do you have in your graveyard? And they reply, well, I have such and such and such. But then they neglect to add the fact that such and such creature is something that's actually pertinent to the game.
Right.
So, they're like traps for each other.
Right. It's the, do you have a counterspell for this? And you say, no, I don't. And then they attack. And that's when you remove all of their attacking creatures from the game with something else, like a different spell. And you're like, I'm not going to counter that spell. But then there's an added rider that you don't say after that, and it's, but if you attack me, I will fuck your shit.
Right, they go like, can you destroy my guy? Like, no, but I can bounce it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, multiplayer has some really interesting quirks to it that don't exist in, two-player games. In fact, there are entire archetypes that are, entirely, you know, created by multiplayer experiences. Things like group hug. Group hug is something that, as a concept, I mean, like, doesn't actually even work really in a two-player game. A deck that is sort of very open in the fact that it's just helping everyone here, have lots of cards and lots of life and have little hippos if you're playing Feldegriff, you know, sort of thing, to the point that it gives everyone else the tools to beat each other's heads in whilst, you know, it's like, oh, I'm nice, I'm giving you lots of things, and here you go, and da 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 da. And then eventually, over time, people realize that they've been building up all these resources and they are now an unstoppable force.
Right.
And, fuck everyone.
Yeah.
there's actually someone in my playgroup who plays the Photograph Group Hunt deck. Mm-hmm. And what I love is that this deck is built to create stories. Like, it doesn't have... There are two kinds of group hunt decks. If you listen to Mark's Deck Builder Spotlight, he had someone who came on with a Photograph deck that was designed after Varys, the guy from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of Kingmaker-type group hunt decks, where it's, I go ahead and provide some support to whoever I want to push, and then I'll withdraw it and start giving it to the other people. My friend, his name is Tony. Tony's Photograph deck is, I'm not really, maybe I have some to help get people back into the game if they're struggling, but it's a game to enable everyone to have crazy super awesome shenanigans. Usually of which one or two people ends up just running away with it. And like, Atarka comes out on turn 3 and now she's murdered someone.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, group hug is a complex beast sometimes because it can have a lot of like, you can shoot yourself in your foot by already having like an established group hug commander, right? Like, so let's say you've got a group hug, you know, Felligriph deck, right? And someone goes, you're gonna be helping anyone. I get that. I'm just gonna kill you because I know that it's all a bluff, right? You've already got that set up for you. That, you know, people might be like, well, you're helping anyone. Like, clearly, you've got something to hide. You can't just be helping everyone, right? Some people might sort of, take you up on just how nice you are. And they're like, oh, clearly you're hiding something. People are being very cynical about it.
Let's see. And then you get the people who are just masters of everything of this combined. There is a level 2 judge who used to be in my area named Brian Rapp. And he had just the best Zedru deck ever. It was your classic Zedru deck where it's like, I just want everyone to draw lots of cards. There's nothing suspicious going on here. Like, he'll lend someone his spell book or his reliquary tower so they can go ahead and keep all the fun cards that they're drawing and stuff like that. He recently came back from Pittsburgh after he moved there, and he told me that his Zedru deck was completely undefeated on the road because he's a level 2 judge. He goes out and judges GPs and events like that. It's never lost because everyone likes drawing all the cards. He's such a great guy to play with. Like, even after we've seen his deck, we don't attack it, even though we know it's dirty, dirty little secret, which is Molten Psyche.
Oh, yes.
He plays Molten Psyche, retains priority, and copies it like 3 or 4 times.
Oh, Jesus.
And that is his only win condition.
Wow.
And almost every game that he can get it. Because even though we know it's coming, it's like, well, we still just like drawing cards. Like, we'll fight to try and keep him off of his enablers. Like, we'll try and get Leyline of Anticipation away. We'll try and keep away the Grand Abolisher. We'll try and keep away the stuff to stop the combo, but we still want to keep him in the game so that we can draw cards, which inevitably leads him to Billion Sports Day back up, which leads to him getting the Psyche combo out.
You're like, I'll take your cursed gold. And I will continue to spend it, but eventually I will find a way out of this, I hope. Probably. As your hand starts to bleed because the money's like, yeah. And I can see myself doing that as well. Just someone handing me this, you know, big wad of cards, like, here, draw all these things. And I'm like, sweet. I look at them and they have big shit-eating smile on their face. And I go,
It's kind of like, it's like someone gives you a wad of $100, right? Like, they just keep giving it to you and giving it to you, but like, you have nowhere to actually put it, so you end up getting crushed under the weight of all this money.
You're like, is this blood money? No.
Not yet. I'd like to see a group hug deck that is just a group hug deck.
Right.
No win con, just, let's help everyone out.
You just help everyone out and hope that everyone else kills themselves?
Well, it's just a deliberate double bluff, because people who know about group hug know that each deck has a dirty secret. How about just a deck with no dirty secret? I do just want to help.
I mean, you say that, but my plan is Zedru the Greatharder deck. The only win condition is Force Fruition.
Which is just
I'm hoping my opponents eventually run out of cards to draw.
Can I just say, that's really funny, playing against just with Force. I have Force Fruition in my Nekozai deck. And nice. That is so much fun, watching people go, what do I do with all these cards?
And literally, You literally just have the meme where it says, why can't I hold all these cards?
Hold all these lines, yeah.
Because you don't have a reliquary tower.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, every single one of those cards just, like, took a little bit of their life away, and they're like, every time they draw a card. Yeah, no, I mean, Nekazar is sort of like the flipped angle, I guess, of the group hug deck, which is like the force feed
group kind slug.
Of
deck.
Group slug, or whatever you want to call it, right? Where you're just going to give a whole bunch of cards to people and punish them for drawing cards.
You want this nice thing? You can have it.
But and yet...
catch.
And yet... I actually got people to be okay with my Nekrozar deck. And that's from two things. One, the inclusion of Possibility Storm, which normally is a card I just hate. I hate it so much because it's one of those cards that just really messes with your plan. It's like, yes, I could get something awesome off of this, but I really just kind of wanted to play the cards I already had. With Nekrozar, that's okay because then it takes off the consistency. But then there's also the fact that I'm playing it like a game show. It's like, okay, welcome to Possibility Storm! Our contestants are you, and you, with our host, Nekrozar! Thank you, Jim! Alright, today we're going to be playing a fun little game. It's going to start with a 2-mana sorcery that's going to become a... spin the wheel! Oh, it's a Wheel of Fortune! That's another game. Copyright.
It sounds a lot more fun than what we do when I have Nekazar out, because it's basically, I get Nekazar out, everyone goes, ah, and then, you know, we start singing the song, you know, every time someone has an upkeep.
Draw two cards, lose two life, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
And everyone sort of just drones it around the table. And then it eventually becomes, draw two cards, lose two life,
da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na kind of known as this dick. Like, he's the quintessential villain. Like, he's like the Eldrazi or the Praetors. He's this guy that you just don't want to play with, and everyone's actually going to want to kill him. So he has a villain role that I like in Grixis.
I like to think that when, like, because obviously Nekazar is like a skeleton or a zombie or something like that. He's some undead character. I like to think that when he was in life, he was happy and he wanted to help everyone, and now he's still trying to help everyone in death, but there's like a curse attached to it, and he's like, draw cards, everybody! And then they start like bleeding from the eyes, and he's like, what's happening, guys? What's going on? Draw the cards!
He's like the pyro from Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, he's just like, he just wants to help, and everyone just starts bleeding, and he's like, I don't understand, I just want to help, guys.
Oh. He starts throwing coins at people, but they're really bees.
He's throwing bags of money at people and just, like, massive bruises on their faces.
It's like the episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns is throwing out silver dollars to the people on the streets.
And they're just landing in people's heads. Yeah. Nekazar just wants to help everybody. Just let him love you.
I tell you what's really fond of Nekazar, and I've only ever pulled this off once, right? My all-time favorite card, and it's such a stupid card, but it's Epic Experiment, right? And I finally found a home for it because I have hit 5 wheels off it with Nekazar out and won that way.
And that's generally like that's like an instant kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just like...
That's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing.
It's like, everybody, I want you to discard your hand and then draw 7 cards 5 times in a row, and you're gonna lose 35 life.
I like that quite a bit. I might have to try that out.
You should absolutely try it out.
Yeah, like I already had an Epic Experiment deck that I loved. It was this really weird Eye of the Storm Omniscience combo deck where it's like, okay, I have a Lightning Bolt, but this Lightning Bolt is somehow going to be able to deal over 40 points of damage to everyone.
Oh, Jesus. That'd be good.
Eye of the Storm actually sounds like a good idea. If you can get a wheel to charge it every turn.
Oh man, I don't know, man. Like I've you know, there's a lot of weird enchantments in Callum's deck, but Eye of the Storm just makes me like, I don't want to have to deal with that.
What, you don't want to cast Decree of Annihilation every turn? What's wrong with you?
I don't want to just think so much about everything that I play.
To be fair, that would be rather counterproductive.
Because
Eye of the Storm,
and... like.
No, it'd be bloody hilarious is what it would be.
If I could switch off the tactical part of my brain and just go, you know what, fuck it, let's give it a go, right? That'd be fantastic. But I'm a spike through and through. I have to think it through, right? And it would be so infuriating to, like, not be able to not think about every possibility and just, like, really try and, like, min-max it.
And I suppose if I had Eye of the Storm, I would only want wheels on it. So I guess I'll just run Teferi's puzzle box instead and just pretend.
And see, that Venus bike is actually, you know, just, it's also just the right mindset going into a multiplayer if your goal is to win, right? Because, like, this whole political aspect gives you just the whole another angle to shoot.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, so much of this, like, spike mindset, I guess, that I have sometimes where I really want to just, like, all right, I'm going to do the best things and I'm going to win, often flies in the face of politics sometimes, because the best tactical move on the board is not always the best move politically, right? I'm like, okay, clearly that person's a threat. I have to remove that right now. I can expend the resources here. That's fine. I'll make it up later. But I have now angered a person. There's a person behind that card on the table that I've tried to remove. And now I have to then deal with that. And that's unfortunately sometimes, like, beyond what I'm thinking about. And I'm like, okay, I gotta deal with this. Okay, oh, ooh, okay, this is the time to wrath the board. Oh, why is everyone upset? Damn it, what's going on? Alright, whatever, I'm just gonna play big creatures and smack this person. Oh, why is that person upset that I smacked them? What's going on? I don't understand.
And that's definitely exacerbated when you play with people that hold a grudge.
Yeah, exactly. Like Tyler. Oh, man. I playing with my girlfriend is always fantastic. Hey.
Sorry.
Wait. It's always fantastic, but she's like very famous for holding grudges when it comes to multiplayer Magic, and still reminds me to this day that once I got an insurrection. Is that what happened?
Possibly.
Okay, basically there was an effect that allowed me to gain control of a lot of creatures, including a lot of her creatures, and I was like, all right, Tyler, I'm gonna need to take this and this from you, and she was like, okay, but don't attack me with it. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then I spent, like, maybe 5 minutes, like, working out what my turn was going to do. And I was like, okay, attack this and this. And Tyler, I'm attacking you with these. And she just looked at me. And it was like, what? She's like, that's going to kill me. I'm like, oh, I mean, yeah, that's the point here. I'm trying to kill everyone on the board. And she's looked at me. She's like, you said you wouldn't. And I'm like, I mean, I sort of did. And she's like, but you said you wouldn't. Those are my creatures. You took my creatures and killed me with them. You son of a bitch.
And see, that's the other thing too, is there's a certain amount of, as much as I love like the wordplay and like the, just the maneuvering of chess pieces here, there has to be a certain amount of honesty in here. Like when you make the alliance and then you're just known for backstabbing, you know, it's harder to build up the, It's harder to get people to do what you want them to do when that's the issue. But when you start actually holding on to things like, hey, okay, I'm not going to attack you, or I'm not going to do this thing to you, then that starts building a sort of, not necessarily a trust, but a confidence. It's like, hey, if William says that he's not going to attack me, then I don't have to worry about him or his stuff, and I can start focusing on other people. But if it's more like, William said he's not going to attack me. Well, I still have to keep stuff up. I still have to keep mana open. And if he does anything, like, look at me cockeyed, I'm just going to blow that shit up. So what and it goes with, like, the retaliation aspect, too. Like, it's all I can say to say, hey, if you attack me, something bad's going to happen. It's another to appear as though every time you do get hit, there's something hitting them back.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, maybe if you're just a little bit more open about, like, hey, look, guys, I'm gonna kill you if you hit me. Just rather than the unexpected, you know.
There's also just the implied threat that can go on. It's like, okay, I could deal with that, but I'm not sure how much I have to worry about that. You know, I like to give people that little bit of window to try and convince me. Yeah, no, this isn't something that I have to worry about. You know, I imply that there's an alliance without actually staking it out to it.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, like, maybe we start talking about particular, like, fantastic cards that we love for multiplayer, because one of my ones that I've found, I'm massively in love with from my Zergo deck, and unfortunately just gonna get changed out of it and put in my brand new Ulamog commander deck,
ooh,
is Assault Suit.
Ulamog.
I love Assault Suit.
I love Assault Suit, because it allows me to take my best creature, make it, have another level of protection on it that it can't be sacrificed. It's a little bit bigger, and every turn I get to lend it out to someone if I want, and then they smack other people with it, and it's great. And what was the situation that I got you and Robbie in?
Horrible.
It was myself, you, and Robbie left in the game, and I had a massively suited up Zergo. And what was it, like, you couldn't gain life or something like that?
Yeah, someone had a...
I'm pretty sure I had an Erebos on the battlefield, and you couldn't gain life. And you just smacked each other to death with it. It was great. I was like, hey, Steven, have this. And he was like, I have to attack. Robbie, I'm attacking you. And Robbie's like, all right, fine, I guess I'll take it. And then passes to Robbie. And I'm like, hey, Robbie, have a Zergo. And he's like, I have to attack with it. I can't attack Matt. Guess I have to attack you, and you just pummel each other to death. It was great.
It was really sad. There was a moment when the two of us just looked at each other and went, yeah, we're fucked, aren't we?
And just imagine that, but if it's attached to an Ulamog, who is indestructible, now can't be sacrificed, and whenever he's attacking, he's making people sacrifice permanents. Mm. How sick does that sound?
So, I might invest in the... Oh wait, she's green white. No.
Like Sigarda.
Sigarda.
Yeah.
So
it's good.
It's good.
I'm just gonna crave annihilation.
That's not a political card. That is a
no. It's the fairest card I have.
I mean, obviously, board wipes are something that are very important sometimes when it comes to multiplayer games because, like, screw the political aspect somewhat. If you need a way to just remove things, you really need to just be like, look, guys, look, no, we're just reset, doing this again. Unless they fuck with people's lands, and then that's when people get mad.
Right. Now see, that actually brings up a good point about resources in a multiplayer game.
Mm.
If you can, because what I found is that the part of the reason I started letting people just do whatever the hell they wanted and force other people to deal with it, is that I was in the mindset of, okay, I'm playing a control deck, I've got to answer everything. You know, it's like playing Madagascar in that Infect game. You know, as soon as someone seizes, shut everything the fuck down.
Pandemic, but, yeah.
Yeah, but you run out of cards a lot when you do that. Even if you, when you just have a lot of draw card effects,
mm-hmm.
that's not really gonna help you and doesn't paint you in a good light. Cause once you start shutting everyone down, everyone starts looking at you with a bitter expression is like, I'm not playing Magic because of you, fucker. And they start throwing things at you.
Yeah, and just like think about it, like if you're a controller deck, you're like, okay, I want to counter every spell that someone's playing. No one's gonna get to play a thing. For you to counter all the spells that you would want to do in a multiplayer game, first of all, you're gonna have to have more mana than almost anyone else at the table, right? So you have mana open, and you're gonna have a card to counter a spell for every spell that gets played, right? Which is very tricky to manage, right? To always have the counter spell when somebody plays the thing. Is tricky if you're trying to counter everyone else's spells. So you've really got to kind of pick your battles. Because, of course, then you'd have to balance that with drawing cards. You'd have to draw more cards than people else, which means you're using your mana up, which means you don't necessarily have the mana up on other people's turns to cast your spells. So,
and it means you're more susceptible to balance.
Yes, it does. But we don't play balance.
Because it's not fair.
It's not fair.
It's not fair in balance.
Balance is not balanced, surprisingly. but, I mean, actually speaking of which, I play Restore Balance in Modern as a deck, and that's good fun.
it's definitely interesting, I'll say that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, if anything, I like to feel that this actually made me a better player in terms of evaluating other people's board states and figuring out when and where I actually needed the point removal. One of the things that always bothered me when I'm playing with newer players is they see something and they just go, oh, I have a thing that can blow it up. Go and blow it up. And I'm like, okay. Like, not necessarily because, like, that was my best thing. Like, if it was my best thing and they were playing it, then okay. I don't play Prophet of Crew Fix and not expect it to be blown up. Like, if you blow my Prophet of Crew Fix, congratulations, you made what was probably the best play. It's when they have, like, a naturalized and they go, okay, blow up your 2-mana mana rock, despite the fact that you have this really big robot that's about to punch me in the face or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what you start to learn when you start learning being conservative with your resources is you start looking at like the keystone of what the strategy is. It's, okay, what's really the big enabler here? What's the thing that's really making this stupid? Oh, it's the armored scales that's making Skullbriar grow bigger than he was before. Oh, it's the enchantress that's giving Earl more cards to put on top of them.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, it's even just a matter of evaluating which players have the biggest things is quite difficult. Like if you're sitting in the game and someone else plays a massive dragon, and you've got removal in hand, you might be going, I've got to remove that. But it might be better to wait until a point where that dragon is maybe specifically coming at you, because removing it right now is good. Yeah, removal is good to kill it, right? But you might not need to expend the resources because A, someone else might kill it, which saves you the card of doing it, and two, or I think it would A and then two, so that's fantastic. So B, in this example, you might never actually need to expend the resources to specifically kill it because people might kill each other.
And that is the best feeling.
Yeah. Sorry, just a second. William.
Friend of the show, Chris, has arrived. And it doesn't have headphones.
A new challenger appears.
Ignore me.
Would you like me to beep you in? I can grab a pair of headphones.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
This is Chris. He's the most Australian man we know.
He sounded like the most Australian man.
His hair grows in the shape of the Australian continent.
Yeah.
He grew up in the far north of Australia, where nothing lives.
In a kangaroo pouch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His mother is actually a crossbreeding of a wombat and a kangaroo, like a reedy.
A wombaroo.
Wombaroo. Or a kangbat.
So yeah, Matt, you said A and two, but what's gamma?
Yeah. So like I said, expanding removal in a multiplayer game is something that maybe takes an interesting amount of tact, and sometimes waiting until the moment when you really need to remove things is necessarily always the right one.
And it also gives you a greater appreciation of it's not just creatures that are threats, because I know anyone that plays against me is always waiting for me to play creatures so they can kill them, and I famously hate creatures. So it's like, I have Confusion in the Ranks out, or I have Time Sifter, stuff that you should be removing, but you're leaving up your removal or counter spells, waiting for me to play Hoarding Dragon, or like one of my creatures I do not care about in the slightest.
I like benign threats. Like, I know I love playing big cards, but there's nothing I love more than playing, when everyone has 40 life, playing Browbeat, and then just watching everyone turn to each other and go, I'm not paying 5 life. So you get a very downscale sort of political thing happening where they just go, yeah, I don't want to lose 5, I'd fuck that.
Yeah, if you give an option to the table, and it's like, anyone can do it, no one really wants to do it.
Yeah.
So you gotta, either you find someone else to fall on that sword, or no one chooses to, and you just get to draw 3 cards.
And I mean, I understand, like, when it's a big threat, like, say, what's the Frog Conspiracy, the one that will...
It was a train. It was a train that just went past my house.
From Conspiracy.
Yeah, there was a train from Conspiracy that just went right by my house.
There's the board wipe from Conspiracy that has the...
You mean Route?
No, there was a spell with Will of the Council on it, and one of the effects was...
Ah, yeah, the
Grace of Condemnation.
The White-Black Angel.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
The Magister of Worth.
You know, and I can understand, when you play that, that's a big thing. Everyone needs to, you know, get on. But when it's something like Blazing Salvo... Deal 3 damage to a creature unless the controller takes 5. Have a think about it. See, you go.
Yeah, I mean, those Punisher effects can be kind of interesting in Commander, but or in multiplayer in general, but you often sort of like... You never really get the effect you want,
yeah.
I find. Like, there's the breaking point, right? It's destroy all creatures for 1 red unless somebody takes 6.
Yeah.
The person who has the most creatures is probably going to choose to take 6.
Yeah, like, in our play group, some of us are a little more flippant about our life than other people, me especially. Especially since a lot of the decks I play, if life gain's a big part of just my playstyle in a lot of games that allow life gain, like if I'm playing Pokemon, well, my first strategies to beat the Elite Four was to spam potion over and over again until they ran out of PP.
Hell yeah.
In modern, I play Soul Stitchers to the point where I can survive a Volt Scourge equipped with a Cranial Plating swinging for 21 a couple times.
Yeah.
Wow.
I need some Soul Sisters.
So, you know, for me, life is like water. Like, I can just throw it around every which way. So, when you get just, like, stuff like that, especially if you're playing with people who are, like, actual good people, unlike us, They'll be like, yeah, I'll take care of that. It's fine.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the flippancy can be a bit stupid sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know, because our friend of the show, Robbie, loves his Majors contest. And inevitably, whenever Majors contest is played, it'll go like this. All right, going to try and counter that spell. I pay one life. Next person goes, okay, I pay two life. I pay 39 life. Counter that spell, bitch. and then we correct you, and you go, Steven, you only have 37. And you're like, oh,
I pay 36.
I have 36 then.
You see, so, like, you're talking about all this, and not necessarily getting, like, the advantage that you would want sometimes. You know, the great thing about multiplayer is that you can get away with some of the slower and smaller things that don't draw the ire of anyone. Like, one of my favorite cards in the Farika Devotion multiplayer deck is Deathreap Ritual. It's the enchantment from Conspiracy that's 2BG, Morbid, at the beginning of each end step. If a creature died this turn, draw a card. Like, it doesn't matter how many creatures died. As long as something died, you get to draw a card. I've drawn, like, at least 7 cards in a single game. You know, because not everything dies every turn. But it's very easy for this thing to just accrue advantage and get you those extra cards that you need to keep your control plane going. Because at some point, you do have to actually expend resources. You know, I'm really excited about Shadows of the Past, the new enchantment from Origins. Because whenever a creature dies, you scry one. If you lose 5 creatures, that's 5 scry one triggers. That's very... It's not something that people freak out over. It's not like going, okay, I draw 10 cards off of this one effect, just completely refill my hand. Because chances are, you've just taken a massive leap. I prefer the more subtle options when I start accruing advantage. I like playing the kind of attrition-y war type thing. Because when I'm playing this in for the long haul. Unless I'm playing like a Kalia deck where I just need that massive reburst right away with like Necropotence or Promise of Power or something like that. I'm going to try and make sure that for every one that they're getting, I'm getting 2 or 3.
Nice. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah. Alright. Before we move into what I wanted to talk about next, does anyone have anything they just wanted to talk about multiplayer in general? Because I want to go move into next. Good multiplayer formats. We've already talked about Commander and just sort of general sort of 60 card, but I want to see if there's anyone who has particular multiplayer formats we want to talk about. But before we do that, anything else you want to finish on?
No, just don't undervalue how important utility lands can be. Because yeah. Those are the most unassuming cards ever, because you just stick them down, you don't even have to announce them, and then suddenly 5 turns later, you're doing all this cool stuff, like Homeward Path, you said. I'm a huge fan of Care Keep, because I can spit out 0/1 kobolds whenever I need to block.
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
Forget things like,
those are the best.
Kesig Wolf Run mm-hmm. is fucking amazing.
Or, my personal favorite, which is, Sunhome, the original, Ravnica, Boros Land, which just gives a creature double strike.
That's nice.
That's really powerful. At the moment where someone doesn't expect it.
Oh, one of my favorite things was always like, they have a small flyer or like they're playing Derevi or Kali or something like that, and they go, do you have any blockers? Any flying blockers? No? Okay. Swing at you. Well, Animate the Wildwood, it has reach. Block your flyer.
Yeah.
Like, you asked if I had flyers and I told you I didn't.
But I have reachers. Ha ha ha. It's good. I love I love some mana lands. So yeah, multiplayer formats, right? First one that comes to my mind, Plane Chase. I love Plane Chase. I fucking love some Plane Chase. It's fantastic. It's fun. And especially fun. Plane Chase you could play 2-player, right? But multiplayer Plane Chase is a fantastic experience where you get to like these effects that we've been talking about. The sort of like the crazier enchantments, or these sort of group hug effects, or maybe even just very powerful effects, can always be printed on these planes. No one has to invest cards to do them. And they just happen naturally. It's so much more fun. And plus it adds just this extra element to the game, that's just this giant stack of cards sitting in the middle, everyone else dies. It's good.
Yeah.
And that even feeds into the political aspect, where there's you're on a very advantageous plane to you, and I say, Steven, please don't roll the dice this turn. I'll grant you a boon later on.
Yeah.
But I'd like to stay on this plane for now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, any thoughts?
Yeah. Plane Chase you can just stick onto any format. It's great.
You really can.
I, I do really like Plane Chase, however, because I like... Here's the thing, though. I like playing it with decks that I have that are more established with what I know and what I do. A lot of this... Because for the past couple years, I've been doing a lot of testing with decks, like, oh, I want to have a black-green deck, so I'm going to keep trying different things to figure out what I wanted to do. A lot of that... A lot of me wants to keep, like, a little bit of a vacuum still built into it, where it's like, well, I like Plane Chase, but, like, some of them just kind of enable things that the deck wouldn't actually do otherwise, or it really messes with what the deck wants to do. So I don't really want to mess with it too much. I like Plane Chase, but I haven't had a lot of opportunity to do it because of the experimental nature of a lot of the decks I play.
Hmm. Yeah, I get what you mean. But, I mean, like you were saying, Callum, Plane Chase as sort of a format really kind of exists in combination with anything else. A whole bunch of stuff just happening in the house. You can hear it in the background. You can really kind of add it onto anything else. You could add it onto Commander. You could add it onto another great multiplayer format. You could add it onto Arch Enemy. You could add it onto draft pools. You could add it onto a cube draft, whatever you want. Like, it's you can really kind of, like, tweak its variable nature however you want. Because, of course, you could always just, like, go through the Plane Chase deck and take out the ones that you really don't like, you know?
Mount Coronia. The worst.
Or the Furnace Lair, right? That one's pretty bad.
Why did they make Icy Manipulation playing?
Yeah.
Went to Orb does not need to be a world effect.
What upsets me about Plane Chase is that it greatly increases the amount of time taken to play a game.
It does.
And the thing is, the more things you tack on, it's exponential growth. Like, mm-hmm. We played a game of, I think it was 3 or 4 player Arch Enemy Plane Chase Commander, and that took well over 3 hours to finish. That was a very long game.
It was a fantastic experience, but yeah. It took a long time. And yeah, I mean, like, I guess talking about, like, multiplayer formats take a long time. Callum, you were there, and Chris, you were there too for the. At my shop, we have these things called repack boosters, right? Which are just, you can buy them for $1, and it's a little penny sleeve that's full of commons on commons from any set in Magic, and then a random, like, $1.20 rare from any set in Magic. And we played 5-player, multiplayer, like, fucking repacked booster pack wars. And that was fucking crazy as an experience, because basically I allowed people to go through their... We had 2 packs, right, for each of our decks, and that's just 30 randomized cards that could be anything. And I allowed people to go through and take out any cards that they just didn't work, right? Like, I had an enchantment that gave all of my level-up creatures +2/+2, and I had no level-up creatures. Or Callum had Harrow in his deck, and we were playing the Pack Wars where you get to cast things for free with infinite mana, so we just had no lands. So Harrow did nothing.
Yep.
And that was an interesting format, because it just took so long, though, even though we had smaller hand size and all that kind of stuff, and you can only cast one spell a turn, you really had to think about what that one spell was, because with 5 people, it just upscaled.
Yeah, and you had to be very specific with your removal, because you have no idea what's in your opponent's deck.
You have no idea what's in your deck, really.
Yeah.
You know what I would like to see?
What?
I would love to see the Uprising format. Use Bolas as the as the big EDH commander. Mm. Fill it with, like, Eldrazi and Phyrexians. You know, just get all the villains in there. Get the 5 tiny leader decks to be the new Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
And then play Plane Chase.
Yes. That would be sick. Like, it's like a battle of these 5 Origins Planeswalkers fighting against Bolas, but they're fighting across different planes, right? That'd be sick.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Fighting against Nicol Bolas, enacting his master plan. Can you beat him? Amazing.
Can you stop him making that omelette? He's been wanting it for 1,000 years.
What?
That's a reference to a joke Stephen made in episode 16. That he didn't even remember because he just looked at me blankly.
That's right. Now I remember. The fact that Nicol Bolas can't do anything without way overcomplicating it.
Yeah.
I remember that one now.
Yeah, Nicol Bolas plans, like, millennia in advance, and he's like, alright, I would like to make an omelette, so I must, like, manipulate this person's family to breed this particular kind of goat so that one day, one time, I can get an omelette.
From a goat?
Well, see, here's the thing about Bolas, is that he wouldn't do it for just one hour. That's too simple of an end game for him. He would have this whole plan to get like this system built. Yeah, like bring everything together so that he can just get free omelets forever. And not just any omelets, like the perfect omelet too. Like he would, like it's like bringing Pokemon or something for him. Like he's got this whole gene lineage lined up. So it's like, okay, we have this goat provided here to add into to milk, and we have this kind of poultry here, and we're going to bring this all together, and it has to be raised by this kind of person.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just imagining there's something like a chain restaurant that exists in the Magic Universe just because Nicol Bolas really wanted a burger, right? It's like, you know, fucking Plains Walker Donald's exists. That was a terrible name, but Plays Walker Donald's exists because Nicol Bolas is like, you know what I really want? Is like a burger at like 2 a.m. There should be a chain restaurant that sells that. So I'm gonna manipulate it over time to build up this empire.
Yeah, all I could come up with was Los Pollos Bolas.
Los Pollos Bolas.
You see, that one exists just because he might want some chicken. Like, he doesn't want it now, but he knows that in about 10 years he might be in the mood for something.
He might want some chicken, and he employs specific people that might get into other shady businesses because he might want that too.
he's got a hankering for chicken and meth sometime in the next decade. Which, I mean, I think we all can relate to that.
Yeah. You know, all of our millennial old elder dragons, you know, he's just sitting there in his meditation realm going, you know, I could really go for the chicken and meth right now. I want a big
old... thing I put this plan into effect.
I want a big old bucket of wings and a big old bucket of blue as well.
So I don't have to keep my eyes open with toothpicks. I'm going to stay up for the next 100 years.
Yeah. That's how he gets so much stuff done, right? He's just like whacked out of his brain.
So other multiplayer forums. How much did you guys like Conspiracy Draft?
We've done it. Well, I've done it 3 times, and we've got plans to do it more times in the future. And I'm a big fan of it, honestly. Conspiracy as a draft format is something that, unfortunately, I've sort of really spiked outside of that. And I feel like I know the format so back to front that if I actually pick up packs, I'll know exactly what I'm doing and all that kind of stuff, which kind of takes some of the fun out of it for me and possibly other people. But as an experience, it's actually really, really fun. Like all the conspiracies had whole other different elements to the game.
Yeah,
all that good stuff.
That's good fun. You get that one guy who pulls WorldNet and goes, "All right, fuck it, 45 World, target
WorldNet challenge,
smack it in."
Yeah,
44. See, perfect.
Damn,
it's great when you're playing with people who don't know conspiracy, because then you start taking all the conspiracies. When my sister was visiting from Chicago for the first time ever, I had gotten enough I had saved my conspiracy box that I got from judging, just so that we could actually have a full 8-person conspiracy draft. Nobody was taking the conspiracy, so I just started taking them. You know, it was like that video that they did for the promotional thing. You know, I was like, Marshall, I was like, well, these things are free and they're really powerful, so I'm just going to start getting them. What I ended up was the, what was it? I think it's a Courier Hawk, which is the 2-drop 1/2 from original Ravnica with Flying and Vigilance, I think. So what I ended up was, they now only cost 1, they come into play with a counter, they have haste, and they also tap for mana.
And I'm guessing you had multiple copies of them as well.
I had 4 of them, one of which was foil.
Whoa.
Good man.
Nice.
That's a good creature right there. A 2/3 Flying and Vigilance for 1.
And haste. So like you go turn 1, land, drop a bird. Okay, that one drops a bird. Okay, that one drops a bird. Next turn, swing 8 at someone.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Fuck that.
See, I on the other hand, and this is my problem with other drafting formats, is that I play control, and then when I try to play control and draft, it doesn't work.
Mm. Well, see, Conspiracy has a control deck in it. Well, like a couple, to be honest.
Yeah, but I didn't spike the format.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, like, the first time we drafted it, I found myself in the best version of, like, the red-white defenders deck that is, like, hypothetically possible. I didn't have any Wakestone Gargoyle. But aside from that, I had every single other card I could ever possibly want. And I had, like, 2 or 3 of the Conspiracy that start the game with a defender. And that was one of the very few multiplayer games I've ever played where I was actually able to be so just subtle for so much of the game, and then I started landing vent sentinels, and I was able to be like, 7U, 8U, 9U, you're dead, look, you're about to die next turn, what are you gonna do? And everybody, like, it just came sort of out of, I feel like it kind of came a little bit out of nowhere, or maybe that just, you know, my rose-tinted glasses on it, but, just, you know, I just sat behind defenders for the entire game, and, fucking, that deck was crazy. I had the conspiracy that lets me cast a spell for any color of mana. So I had a red-white deck with a phage in it. And that was just kind of ridiculous.
I'm still telling you to put phage in all of your commander decks. Because phage and possibility storm is just the best combo.
No, it's not.
You can just automatically die. How's that not the best?
You can choose not to cast it off the possibility storm.
But then you're not getting value.
My one regret with Phage is that I actually traded for her in the conspiracy draft because I had the deal broker. And I named her with my haste conspiracy. Someone was wide open and I could have played her and just Phage out of nowhere. And I didn't take it.
Oh,
my one regret.
That's the dream right there. It's just like, boom, you're dead. Wait, what? No. And that's when you go for the boom, you're dead, and someone flickers the Phage and then boom, you're dead.
You think that's game you're playing?
I've been accidentally lethaling people at Standard recently with the Elves deck that I'm playing right now. And so someone has attacked me for what they think is lethal. And it totally is. Except, collect a company, get 2 Shaman of the pack. 17 life. Sorry. Gord, like 18 life, because it has to be a round number. Yeah, it's just, all of their life has disappeared, and now I am the wiener. I am the wiener.
You are a ween.
Wow. I tell you what I do like. I like Cube.
Cube is good fun.
Cube draft is very, very good fun.
Mm-hmm. Because you can take the World Net Challenge.
Sorry, go ahead. No, I love Cube. My roommate has a Cube that he maintains and updates and stuff like that. It's one of those proxy power cubes where we get to play with like the Lotus and then Special Recall and stuff like that.
Nice.
It was so much fun when Power Play, not Power Play, Backup Plan was in it.
Oh, Backup Plan is a good conspiracy.
It's like, yes, I can play the 14 land super aggro deck.
It just seems so unfair. Just draw 2 opening hands, pick which one you want.
It is. It's like crazy. Everyone else voted it out of the cube. I wanted it in there just so I could have the completely unfair everything's a 1 and 2.
Alright, well, I think we actually talked a fair bit about multiplayer just in general. We talked politics, we've talked sweet cards, we've talked multiplayer formats. Is there anything you really wanted to tackle, William, before we close everything up?
Nothing in particular I don't think we haven't covered already. I mean, my hatred of Spider Storms are already well known. I mean, maybe not as famous as Chewie's, but still.
You'll be pleased to know that they're alarmingly uncommon, the Spider Storms.
Well.
Now, the fact that you said alarmingly uncommon.
Yeah, it's less common than you think, but more common than you hope.
Yeah. I mean, if it ever happens once in your lifetime, that's way too many times, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. So, as almost always happens whenever we talk to anyone related to anyone outside of Australia, come to Australia. It's a fantastic place, and it'll scare the dicks out of you.
Although, right? If you come in the next couple of months, you will be attacked by birds.
There's no reason to come here anymore. You can get Tim Tams in America now.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Tim Tams are being sold in America now. That's it. That's our entire tourist industry gone.
But what about our cork hats and the cobras and all that stuff?
And the slightly smaller Ayers Rock that's at the Leyland Brothers theme park.
I told you about that the other day, didn't I, Chris?
Yeah.
You know, William, there's a landmark in the state that we live in. It's about 500 kilometers away from us.
Or 350 miles.
I shit you not. Yeah, I could calculate that. Damn, I haven't been doing that this episode. I shit you not. I shit you not. It is a Land Rover on a pole. Do you want to know what it's called? It's the Land Rover on a pole. It's a landmark of our state. It's a Land Rover on a pole.
Did you say this was a statue?
No, no, no. It's an actual Land Rover on an actual pole, but it's a landmark.
Like someone just put a car there.
I
I mean, we've also got, what, like, there's the big banana, there's the big pineapple, there's the big shrimp.
Big sheep.
The big lobster.
Big lobster.
Do we...
You see, those make sense because they are food. I'm still trying to imagine this Land Rover that's on a pole.
Yeah, you could look it up. It's just called the Land Rover on a pole.
I'm doing that right now.
Land Rover on a pole. There it is.
There it is.
Land Rover on a pole. That's a really small image.
The Tatiara District Council presents the Land Rover on a pole.
Why?
It's a tourist trap.
Is the trap that they knock the pole from underneath and land over and land on them?
Double parkers.
I just love one of the comments on this, though. It just says, what's the chain for? Because there's a chain at the bottom. They're just dangling off into nothingness. Just there for no reason. Ah, Australia is a fantastic place sometimes.
Yeah. We had Squee tell us, however, about the...
The big peachy butt?
The big peachy butt. Which is a thing.
Yeah, Ohio doesn't have anything like that that I know of. Like, if Australia, we compare Australia to Zendikar between me and my sister, and we call, like, Chicago Ravnica because it's a really big city type place. Ohio's Innistrad. There is nothing here. Like, you can be driving out, and there's nothing but cornfields, and maybe some sign saying that the end is nigh, repent to Jesus and all that.
Yeah.
But like, if you go into the woods, then just random things will jump out at you. Maybe it'll just be like a raccoon, but if it's like a possum, those bones are brittle and they'll puncture your tires. I've had deer jump out randomly at me twice and just completely knock off my side mirror and walk away completely unscathed.
Wow.
See, kangaroos are kind of like that to us.
Yeah, I mean, a kangaroo completely totaled my dad's car and he's driving along the freeway. There's basically no bush on the inside of the freeway, and all of a sudden a fucking kangaroo just jumps right out, right in the front of his car, and they are, like, packed of meat. They are just, like, muscle. So you just slam right in and just rode the car. But I just found the best bit, though, about this Land Rover on a pole, which I have to come back to, is that the town that it's from is called Keith. It would be fair to say that the wheat-growing town of Keith in South Australia isn't exactly the most exciting place in the country, but Keith's attempt to get on the tourist map is more inexplicable than most. The Land Rover on a pole, as the name would suggest, is a Land Rover on a pole. There's nothing else with it. It's just a Land Rover on a pole.
Oh, sweet shit.
Australia, mate.
Fucking Keith. You know we have feral camels in Australia. Like, they were brought over here sort of, you know, to help people cross the desert, right? Because camels have an affinity for them.
But they're feral.
Yeah, now they're feral. Like, there's a huge overpopulation of camels just in the desert part of Australia.
Well, because camels already had a history of double-crossing explorers, so next possible step is they just work on their own.
But what happens is, like, you can hit a kangaroo, and yeah, your car will be fucked, but you'll more than likely be okay, because they've got a very low center of mass. Like, it's fine. But... Yes,
it's all the testicles.
Talking with my hands again. Sorry about that, William. You can't see that. But
I'm sorry, I don't get this.
But
we have
the camels as well. Now, camels are big, heavy things on four spindly legs. And if you hit one with your car, you're going to knock its legs out from underneath you, and it's going to come through your windshield. People have been killed by camels, just hitting them, and then just having the entire inside of their car streaked with camel.
I mean, not to mention drop bears, right? Like, drop bears is, like, totally, like, a real... terrible, terrifying danger.
I mean, that the cemetery that Stephen lives near is just full of graves dedicated to the victims of drop bears.
Yeah.
It's like, so the kangaroos there will fucking kill you.
Yeah, I mean, you think about koalas as, like, these cute, cuddly little things, but they got, you know, drop bears are, like, the serious fucking cousins of them. They will maul the fuck out of you, and they just love to jump down on trees right on your face. It's terrifying.
See, what's even bad is that the drop bears set up underneath, you know, just above the gravesite, so that if people actually want to visit their loved ones, suddenly drop it. It's like the perfect trap.
Those bastards.
In fact, there's also one on top of that Land Rover on a pole, just in case a tourist gets too close.
It's his Land Rover. He's pissed off about the whole thing. So,
but yeah, okay,
we don't have exciting animals. Like,
are you kidding, man? Have you seen the platypus? That thing's exciting as shit.
They're cute, but okay,
have you seen the blue-ringed octopus? Look. If you see it, you're dead, because it stung you.
In the eye. No. The thing is, evolution passed by Australia. Natural selection did not happen here. We have no predators. There are animals here, like the wombat. Why the fuck should the wombat exist? There is no reason for this animal to be alive. If there were predators, it'd be fucking dead. You know, if there were cougars, or not like old women, but like who still want, you know.
Mountain lions.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, they are mountain lions, that's for sure.
What? What the fuck are you talking about?
I got that.
Like, you've seen it multiple times in, you know, Australian history that, like, you can just fuck over the ecology by introducing anything, yeah. Really. Cane toads, foxes, rabbits.
White people.
Yeah, really bad. fucked over the ecology really bad.
There's an animal. There's an animal in our state that only... It's called a quokka, Q-U-O-K-K-A, and quokka. It only lives on a tiny island off the coast of where we live.
Called Rat's Nest.
They're basically, they look like big rats. They're stupid. They're not very intelligent creatures. They're very cute, but if there were predators around, they'd be dead. Natural selection did not happen here. Look at that
and
fucking
now,
face.
Now they're used to soccer balls.
Quokka soccer is
here. Here you go, William. Enjoy a quokka.
I'm scared to click the link, but I'm going to do it anyway.
That's one of the things that won't kill you immediately.
Look at these things.
It's so cute!
It's super cute, right?
So they only live on like a, 10 square kilometer island, 15 square kilometer island?
Something like that, yeah.
About that. Because you can bike around it in like an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah.
How have these things not been abducted as pets yet?
Because they're like really dirty and... full of malicious diseases.
Yeah, see, we don't have rabies in Australia, but we still don't touch wild things. I don't want to touch a frothy quokka.
What the fuck?
The happiest things on the list.
They also take selfies too. This is, of course, another unfortunate member of the populace who was then later mauled by this quokka.
I think we lost him.
We
broke William.
Oh, shit. My face hurts.
So this has been fun.
This has been fun. It's been good.
See, now I just want to Photoshop my face over that car and be like, hey, look what I did in Australia.
Oh man, if we did like images for our episodes, I would totally just take this, I would Photoshop you where that guy is, and then I would have he'd be wearing like a Squirecast hat or something like that.
Yeah,
it'd be like William and Squirecast, and that's us.
Hey, look if William comes to Perth, Australia ever. Right, it's like the least attractive place in Australia to come to. But if you do, we'll show you quokkas. We'll take you right out.
It's fucking speaking of that. Apparently, like I think it was like Forbes or something like that did like a thing for the 10 most underrated great tourist destinations in the world, and Perth was number 8.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, the funny thing is that all the interesting stuff is not in Perth. It's out.
Which is kind of interesting because like if you want to go on like a holiday somewhere and you just really want to relax, you just sort of come to Perth and you can just. Chill, because nothing happens here.
Yeah.
It's like nothing happens here, but you've still got this sort of established basis of being in a city. So nothing happens, but you can still stay in a hotel and go to, like, restaurants and stuff.
Didn't we have, like, those pro-racism rallies the other month?
Oh, God, yeah. We're having that whole thing with, like, Reclaim Australia.
Yeah.
And then the anti-rallies to that.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of racism in Australia. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's racism everywhere. How's racism in your country?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Aside from being super expensive, Perth is very chill.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. And unless you're near a tree, in which case a magpie will fucking try to claw your eyes out.
And everyone, like all of the people in Perth, not the animals, are like, man, why am I in Perth? I think anyone that I went to school with, whenever they talked about sort of like, where they thought themselves, like, living when they grew up was like, yeah, I'm probably going to move out of Perth, go somewhere else, just fuck off, do anything else. All the exciting stuff in Australia happens on the other side of the country, unless you are talking about being mauled or hit by something. It's on, then it's on this side. Or mining, I guess.
Yeah, lots of money in mining.
Yeah, lots of money in mining.
Most
yeah.
of Australian money comes from WA. It's just, we don't want to have to do it.
The same as Australian money, though. It's just monopoly money.
Anyway, final thoughts, guys. William, you're the guest host on this episode. Final thoughts before we head off?
Final thoughts? I really don't want to actually visit Australia, but damn, those things are cute.
They're fucking adorable.
You should.
Well, I
maybe if there's a JP with, like, everything on the outside. Like I'll visit not
yeah, I mean, Australia. There are GPs in Australia, but they happen on the other side of the country, in Sydney, mostly. A little bit in Queensland. I think I'm pretty sure I saw one in Adelaide once. But yeah.
Because again, Perth has a population of roughly 2 million people. And the other side of Australia has a population of roughly 18 million people.
This state makes up half the country and it's only got one city.
Yep.
Like that's, yeah.
One.
To be fair, Alaska's kind of like that.
Yeah, but Alaska's, I don't want to say inhospitable. I think that would be.
There are people living there.
You know, there are people living there. Nobody lives in this enormous state of
ours. Yeah, I mean, like, you realistically don't have to fight the element that much to, like, live somewhere in WA.
You could shove two or three of Alaska in WA anyway.
Yeah.
Well, see, polar bears aren't people.
They're not snuggly, though. I don't know. I wouldn't want to snuggle one.
You can snuggle a quokka. I mean, you probably shouldn't.
They're not polar bears.
But they're little.
But again, going back to wombats, they're useless unless you try to touch them, in which case they will maul you.
No, like, wombats will crush the shit out of anything that goes into their, like, burrows. They're just, like, pure muscle, like the size of, like, two basketballs put together with legs. Like, and then they just crush things.
Every time we talk about Australia, I think back to that old comedy song, which just goes, come to Australia, you might accidentally get killed. It just lists all the things that will kill you.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you'll become stronger for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. That which doesn't try to mull your face off makes you stronger.
With each animal attack I've survived, I've gained some of its strength.
So you've got to stop to eat the corpse of your wannabe attacker, though.
No, yeah. just
that's
the heart.
How you gain their power.
Just drain the heart into your mouth, and you're like, I have magpie powers now.
And the worst part is we can't kill magpies because they're protected.
Yeah. So...
Final thoughts,
guys.
Carry on with it.
William loves quokkas. My final thoughts are, give Noron the Wary a chance, back to MTG for a bit. He may not look like he does much, but there are so... Genesis Chamber, we didn't talk about at all. So many cool effects. Calm the hell down, William.
I'm sorry. I looked at it again.
We just got it sitting up on the screen, so I think I've developed somewhat of an immunity to it.
I'm gonna mute for a moment. Calm down.
Don't worry, listeners. They're gonna be in the show notes. I'm gonna have this photo and a link to the Land Rover on a pole as well.
Because here at Squirecast, we're fucking educational.
We are promoting local tourism. City of Perth.
Someone spell quokka in the chat.
It's a quokka.
Final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Stephen.
No, I don't think I had any.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess. I do. I'll tell you what, I'm actually really hungry.
Please share them.
Alright, I'm very hungry.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm hungry too. I mean, this is what happens when we get up really early in the morning. Not really enough time for breakfast, and then now we're heading into lunch.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Hey, fuck off, man.
You live here, you didn't have to get up very early.
I know. I literally walked out of bed into this room.
I was up at 5:10 to eat breakfast before this, and I'm not tired.
Well, you know what? You could have slept in. If you just left breakfast behind, you wouldn't be complaining about how early you got up. You could get up at 5:30 and not eat breakfast. It's an extra 15 minutes sleep.
No, the thing is, I'm not complaining about getting up early because I'm used to it.
Oh, okay. No,
I start work at 7 a.m, so I'm used to getting up early for it.
I was up at 3:30 in the morning, right? Like, going from last day into this, and I sat there thinking... I have to get up at like 7. Do I just not sleep? Is that the best option? And then do I just like nap from like 12 onwards? I don't know. But yeah.
Just be thankful you don't have a real job.
Oh, shots fired.
Just a little bit of like a jab,
just
right?
Just dig in there.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway,
Final thoughts. I am hungry, and it's always good to have guest hosts on.
Yes, it
is. This is our second guest host. This is also our second guest host named William.
It is.
Thank you, William, for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me on and for showing me that wonderful, wonderful image.
Yes.
I'm scared to click on the tab again because I'm afraid I'm just going to start giggling madly again.
We'll make sure to tweet it to you as well. Make sure you look at that every day of your
life. Yeah, share it with all your followers. If nothing else, thank you for being on the show. We can show you quokkas taking selfies.
No. He's gone. That's it.
We've lost him again.
I didn't even look this time.
He just thought about it. It's just a memory of it. Alright, so from all of us here at Squirecast,
Wait, stop. William, how can our audience members reach you?
I was gonna go into that. Alright, whatever. Okay, William, how can our listeners reach you?
So, if you want to follow the example set by your goblin tactician today, you can go ahead and follow me individually. I'm on Twitter. I'm @blueram1409. You can email me, wiehernandez@gmail.com. But if you want to hit us up at CommanderCast Prime, you know, the podcast, the network, the whole thing that we're trying to set up there, you can go ahead and email us tweet us @CommanderCast and email us CommanderCast@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page where our guys, Calvin and Judson, man that. And, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hey, and listeners, go listen to these guys. They're good.
They are. Absolutely. Squirecast officially endorses CommanderCast. There you go.
And CommanderCast officially endorses Squirecast. Hey. Although you're already listening to Squirecast, you must have already been invested in Squirecast to begin with, so I guess it's just kind of a double summit.
We're endorsing Squirecast on Squirecast.
Yes.
I'm standing in the victory pose.
That's how cross-promotion works, right? All right, well, if you want to contact us at Squirecast, you can contact us at mtgsquirecast@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook at Squirecast, and you can follow us on Twitter, of course, at Squirecast.
And don't forget, you can also email Teferi at he'strappedinatimebobble@gmail.com. The old forgotten email address from the first episode of Squirecast.
Yes.
Bring him back a classic. Someone fucking email it, please. I get very lonely.
You mean Teferi gets very lonely?
I mean Teferi gets very lonely. That was a dumb in-joke that is just not going.
Yeah, it's not going. No one picked it up, dude.
Because no one wants to type in a 25-letter email address.
I just love it.
Stop looking at the picture, will you?
All right.
I can't.
So, from all of us here at Squirecast, big thank you to William Hernandez for coming on our show.
For vomiting on our show. What are you doing?
And
Did you die,
dude?
I'm okay.
He's okay, ladies and gentlemen. And, my name is Matt. I have been your goblin guide for this morning.
My name is Bean Callum, and I have been here the entire time.
Yeah. He has been William Hernandez. May still be, not sure. And I'm Bean Stephen.
And also Chris is in the corner. Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye.
There you go, and we will catch you on the next episode of Squirecast.